Should be.
How many of you?
No, 12 or 15.
Call the meeting in order. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Grunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Sansom?
Here.
Town?
Here.
Quorum present.
So tonight we're here with a pretty short agenda, but hopefully it's going to be a long meeting with lots of new input. So I think at this point, I'll turn over to you, Mike, and...
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I'd ask for this meeting because I thought it was time to give the commission and the community an update on what's been going on for the last several months, especially since we have a new commissioner involved to make sure that the direction to staff and to our architect, Ray Kendra, is going in the right direction. Ray has been working very hard with C2AE as the consulting engineers on this project and with various members of the staff to bring you plans today that are approximately at the 50% stage is what Ray has told me most recently, and to give you an idea of a number of topics. So while there's one item on the agenda here, Ray's going to go through a list of things that are going to hopefully cover topics that have been brought to my attention by one or more commissioners or the community over the last couple months, and hopefully get us up to speed, have some discussion about it, and then at the appropriate time, we can take formal actions on items that need action at future city commission meetings. So I don't really have anything much further to report. I think the main information for at least the good part of this meeting will come from Ray whenever the commission's ready. And I'm assuming, depending on how Ray wants to run it, that this should be an interactive process so people can ask questions through the chair when it's appropriate.
That was what my question was. So the audience can participate through me at appropriate times?
Yes.
You're okay with that, Ray?
Yes.
Okay. Then that's how we'll proceed.
Okay.
You can have it, Ray.
Okay, so I've put together an agenda for the commissioners that will just go over various items. I wanted to start out with the DPW, just to give you a quick update. I know you had a walkthrough earlier in the week on the DPW. I did a punch list today on some areas that we were not able to get into last week, so I spent several hours over there this evening before this meeting to kind of go through that. There's still a lot of cleanup. There's quite a bit of painting type related items. I know that you all saw at the walkthrough there was a lot of switches that they cut the holes too big and so forth. There's a lot of that kind of thing that's going to have to get patched. So I have a fairly lengthy list, but there's nothing major. There's a lot of stuff that they're going to have to clean up. So there was some inspections that took place today. They're doing a final where all the parties, all the inspectors come together, and they basically need to test the fire alarm system. So that's what they're going to do Monday. After that, that's when they'll be able to get their final occupancy. So we should, I've been told by the contractor today that we'll have final occupancy or that final inspection completed on Monday. They don't expect any issues. So that should be the plan. I think it's going to take them longer than Monday to get all the painting, patching, and things that have to be done. So I'll be coordinating with Andy on Monday when he comes in and probably sharing an email with him tomorrow just to give him a heads up. And I know he's aware of, you know, what's going on somewhat over there. So they can start moving things in, but there's going to be certain areas that if there's a lot of painting or work that has to be completed, I really want to be, you know, cautious to give them enough space to finish it properly. Because the way I look at this is we have one chance to get it where we want it, because then once they go in, it's going to be used and banged around and get dirty pretty fast from just, you know, the staff using it. So I'd like to get it as tight as possible before he really moves in there in full. So again, I'll work with Andy on that. And again, I would expect within, I'm hoping by the end of next week that the permit part I'm not really concerned about, but as far as the punch list items, I'm hoping that they can complete everything by the end of next week. So then in full, they'll be able to go. Next week's a short week within the holiday. So we'll work through it to get them in there as quickly as possible. So if there's any questions on the DPW specifically before we move on to City Hall.
Okay. Anything, commissioners?
No.
Okay. So, I'm sorry, was there a...
Do I go to the public and see if they had any questions as well, too?
Any questions, department heads or citizens? Thank you.
Okay, so we'll move on to the City Hall Emergency Services Building Project. And I guess what I want to do is just kind of go through methodically on things. The good news is there's not been a lot of plan changes. It's really been more of a developmental type of approach. As we're working through details with the structural, mechanical, I can slide this over, Mike.
So why don't you switch with me, and then you can get closer, and I can make the screen bigger that way.
Okay. I'm just saying I can switch my computer.
Sweet, thank you.
So fundamentally, the building has really not changed. As we've been moving through the process over the last several months from some of our earlier meetings and renditions, so conceptually, the footprint is the same. The site plan is where I want to start with, and there's a bit of a change that took place there, and that change was actually done to primarily be efficient with the parking and so forth, but also to maximize the green space, because we know that has been a concern all the way along from the very get-go. You know, green space has been an issue. So what we're looking at is all the 3D is the same drawing as the site plan, so I'm going to work with the 3D because it's a lot more interactive and easier to see, but we can flip over to the site plan as well. I'm going to actually bear with me because I'm going to jump all around tonight. So this, I am going to start with this site plan because what I want to show you is okay. So this is the building in relation to the gray building, being the DPW building that's existing. The key thing that we have to do is we're going to keep the DPW building up so that the fire department is maintained during construction. So as always planned, we'll be building the new facility. As soon as that's completed, the fire department will move over, vacate the DPW building, and whoever else might be operating out of the DPW building, and then that final phase will take place. This line right here, this dashed line, is the line of demarcation for what we're calling phase one and phase two. So there's a fair amount of site work that's going to have to take place after the building is completed. The one thing that we're going to have to coordinate is the work that takes place on North Street, because the primary public parking area is being designated as North Street along here. And then I'm going to flip to the 3D drawing just because it's a little bit clearer. So the way that the site plan has adjusted in a fairly minor way, we believe, is the emergency services personnel will be parking back here. That hasn't changed. We've continued to maintain a large circulation area, but also training layout area for use. And this is meant to be emergency personnel only. So if the firefighters or EMS folks are coming in, and more particularly the firefighters, the idea would be that they'd be coming in off of Lake Street. You know, they can get through here, but what we're trying to do is create a situation where we're discouraging public use of this parking lot. And really, once you hit this point, we want authorized personnel only to go into that parking lot, and then the access off of Lake Street. So emergency vehicles will exit all out of this Lake Street exit. So that's fundamentally stayed the same all the way along. Once area that we are looking at is to make sure that we could fit the largest vehicle outside. We had to do a little adjustment with how this building's situated, and it was more just picking up the fire apparatus bays and sliding them over 6 feet. So it wasn't a large plan change, but what that allowed us to do is flipping back to this drawing. So that allowed us a little bit more breathing room around the existing DPW, so we didn't feel that we were going to be pressing on that quite as much as we were in some earlier versions. And we had made some adjustments to EMS, made that a little wider and so forth. So, but that all worked out fine. So we'll be able to fit the largest ladder truck out there in front of the building without crossing the sidewalk. And, you know, that'll take place in this area. So that was a big thing that we've talked about with Denny and his staff. So that's side of the site is exactly as always presented. Previously, we had a large parking lot shown here, and we were doing a little bit less work on North Street over here. In the course of the design, there was some concerns identified with some of the sewers that are existing on North Street, that in the past years they've had some freeze-ups and everything else. So as a way to kind of try to get that corrected as part of this project, we ended up doing more work on North Street, and in doing that, we wanted to reduce the amount of work we were doing here, which was a way to balance out the cost. But then the benefit to doing that was is that we have more green space here. An idea has come up recently to weave a portion of the existing paving that's kind of tied in with all the parking lots and where the existing DPW building is and so forth. So right now, the current plan is showing this little strip of asphalt that's existing to essentially remain as existing asphalt, but it'll allow the parking lot, the baseball field, and then provide a little parking that can be used to access, you know, adjacent properties this way. At this point, as always, we've not been addressing this connection. We feel like in the future that that's going to be a strong area that is ripe for development, particularly when you look at a aerial satellite view and so forth. You can see, you know, a lot of people park here. I park here when I come early for lunch or something. So I see a lot of people using this, and in the future we're going to want to, you know, ultimately have a plan to deal with that area. But we're not doing anything as far as connecting these two lots right now. It's more a matter of keeping the existing primarily to service the ball field, but it could also be used for overflow parking. So the intent is going to be then that all this will be brand new. This is where the primary parking will be for the public that's coming to City Hall. You know, regular business, there's plenty of spaces here to access in front of City Hall. There's adjacent parking across North Street, which we've now removed all that emergency vehicle traffic off North Street, so that's very positive. The idea is to identify this lot here as being a staff-only lot, more for administration and that sort of thing. And so that there's an entry on, so spun around here, so on the back side of the building, and I can show you in plan, we've got heated sidewalks and heated aprons in front of the fire apparatus bays and in front of the EMS bays. So this area would also be a heated sidewalk, which would bring people from this parking lot to, there's a vestibule and an entry on this backside. We're looking at that as being a staff entry. It's an emergency exit. Anybody can use it, but the intent is that that's potentially a staff entry. And then on the front side, we have heated sidewalks across this front area and then this front walkway here, which would service the general public parking access that's going to occur there. This drawing doesn't show it, but there's actually, the drop boxes are intended to be here. And by creating the drop boxes, a mailbox, a bill paid drop box, and then this little island, the idea is that that's going to create kind of a traffic calming scenario where it's a safe place for pedestrians to cross. If we go back to our site plan, we have what we're showing is, so this is that little area in question that we're talking about. This is all concrete walk. So the idea is that we're going to, instead of doing asphalt paving, like what the typical parking lot will be, we're going to pave this in concrete. So there's going to be also a material change there. So you've got the island, you've got a material change. We think that's going to do a really good job for bringing people across, because long term, the plan is always to continue to build on the concept that we start with, that we're trying to utilize this park for a sort of village green, really emphasize the connection between downtown and get pedestrians coming across the park, using the park, coming to City Hall. So that's kind of the concept site-wise there. So I guess I would ask for any feedback on that particular parking lot, because that's something that you haven't seen in the iterations that we've been working on, and we certainly welcome any comments that the commission would have.
I have one question. It's like North Street development and also the parking at the ball field side there. Is all this going to be curbed and gutted?
The North Street piece will, the ball field, this existing parking is literally cutting off certain areas and leaving the existing parking as is. We're not improving it. We're not repaving it. There might be a possibility that we want to reseal it and stripe it just to make it look new, but the idea was not to put any dollars into this parking area. It was literally, it exists, we can save it. If we were to get rid of that, we had a version, and I don't have that with me, but we had a version where we took it out and we just left this all as green space, and that's another option.
So
that we
how about curb and guttering at the employee parking or the
Everything else will be curbed and gutted.
Including North Street?
Correct.
Okay.
North Street up till basically where the parking ends.
Where we show it on that end there, so.
As you get towards the ball field, it'll transition back to what it is existing.
Right, so even across the street, you can see that where they're showing curb and gutter across there, and then that's what the double line would delineate. And then, so that's coming, that parking lot, that existing parking lot is, there'll be a new curb cut to get into there, basically, and then it'll stop essentially at the edge of the ball field is where that's gonna stop, so.
Go ahead, Laura.
A quick question. On the staff parking area, could that be signed where it's only staff parking during regular hours of City Hall, so that on weekends or festivals, say on a Saturday or Sunday, it could be used for visitors?
Sure, I think that would certainly be. And we don't have to put any.
That could be kind of a dual purpose kind of thing.
We don't have to articulate that per se, and the only reason why we would consider it, because the police garages, egress out of that location.
Right, okay.
So we don't want to encourage, it's not like the police, and I think it's on the chief here.
Yeah.
So the, it's not like there's, the doors fly open, they come screaming out there or something. But the bottom line is, there is, that is an area that's somewhat sensitive. So I don't think we would necessarily want to discourage, but I'd certainly welcome the chief's input as far as, whether or not we do put signs there for weekend use or, Monday through Friday staff only. We don't have to put anything. We really want to sign this area here as being authorized personnel. Like, we don't want people wandering through here. We don't want people trying to egress out of, out on the Lake Street. I mean, we really want to create a situation here that we discourage the general public any time of the year from using this parking lot.
I wasn't referring to that section, just the.
Understood. I think that's certainly open for however we want to sign it. All we were talking about doing is a couple signs right now, and they can say whatever we want to have. We will have the emergency flasher signs for the fire department when there's a call that, those light, there's LED type of lights that'll light up. It's a kind of a standard sort of sign that'll occur, and that's going to happen on Lake Street as well. But back to the point of this parking lot, we're open for discussion and suggestions as to how people think we should be signing that.
I like the addition of the green space and less of a parking lot look, personally. But
I have two questions. The police, will they exit in an emergency situation, will they go left or right when they come out?
They'll have the option of going either way.
Okay.
I think a lot of it will depend on what the situation is, what's going on in the park, things of that nature.
Okay.
But we always want to make sure that if there is a major event going on in the park, that they can exit directly to the north to go out to Lake Street.
And my second question is, number of parking spaces on this compared to what we have currently? Do you have that comparison?
I need to double check that. I'm sorry, I meant to have that information. I didn't bring it. It's very comparable to what we have. We've been checking the numbers, and as far as exact numbers, it's within a reasonable percentage of being exactly what we have. We certainly don't have the substantially less amount. We had more, I believe, in the last iteration where we had a little bit more parking, but then again, we extended North Street, the parking that's going to occur there. It was always there, but the improvement of that North Street parking got extended, so.
Well, I like North Street parking rather than a big parking lot. I think that's an improvement. And my last question, the parking lot that's closest to the water at the end of the ball field, that one, is that currently there?
Yes.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So I'd love to see that green, but, but if it's there, I understand.
Well,
is there?
Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, is there a reason why that has to stay and it just can't be turned into green space?
The whole parking lot?
Yeah, that strip of asphalt there.
No, that's one of the things we wanted to talk about today, is to kind of get a consensus on what we want to do. It's really, that parking lot, I think, services that ball field more than anything. I think that, so we have to weigh the benefit of maintaining that parking lot for the ball field and for grandparents and parents or whatever on inclement days to be able to pull up and, watch from the car versus having a big green space there, because we had earlier, we've looked at both versions, and, you know, it's a nice option to have a big green space there. It just, again, if you take that piece out of the mix, it really, mm-hmm. it really focuses the development in the first couple hundred feet off of Lake Street, and, you know, we're maintaining several more hundred feet all the way across the whole park, and it really, it's going to be a big change, especially when it's hard to, this drawing, I don't think I had that overlay, but again, if we look at that site plan, and you know, you can see that shaded gray area shows you where the existing DPW is, and that's a big, massive building mm-hmm. surrounded by asphalt mm-hmm. right now. And if you can imagine, essentially from, you know, the back or mm-hmm. in the neighborhood of the back of this building, having that almost all green space besides that smaller parking lot, it would be a nice thing. So I don't think there's a right and wrong. I think it really is just a decision for the community. The idea was, you know, it doesn't cost anything to leave it. And that's really what the kind of argument for leaving it would be, is that it's really not going to cost anything to leave it. If we have to demo it, it'll be demoed with the rest of the project. So that's a pretty, one of the major things I wanted to talk about tonight is yes or no on that extra asphalt parking area there.
That parking is in relatively good shape. That was added by, that was one of the first projects of the DDA when it was first doing all the alley parking mm-hmm. and stuff downtown. It does get a fair amount of use for people that go not only to the ball field, but to that go to that little beach area to put in or take out kayaks and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. If we left it there and decided to take it out, that's something that the DPW could plow up and we could always reseed as well too, or take a look at it later on. So my thought process was leave it there. If we don't like it, we can change it, remove it. Yeah. And if you did want to do something with regards to a loop, you know, as Ray said, it's not costing us anything. By not removing it, it's actually saving us some money off the get-go. But if we don't like it, we can always pull it. Again, also keep in mind that little garage building that's back there now, is looking, that building is scheduled to be removed as well too. The police have expressed some interest to possibly pick up that building and relocate it to out to the wastewater treatment plant for some of their operations out at that location. And we're looking to see if that's cost effective to pick it up and move it, or if it'd just be cheaper just to see if anybody wants to buy that building and do something else on our own.
Yes. Well, would it be possible to create maybe an alternate where you do something, you know, behind the ball field there to the lake, and you clean that up, and then maybe you have a loop that goes through that parking lot, if that's important, and get rid of the long strip so you still have that green space?
And include it in the project, or?
Yeah.
I guess what I would tend to recommend is, I think there has to be probably more thought and public input on that piece, because it really, we've talked about it, everybody knows it's there, but it's not something that anybody spent any time thinking about. And at this point of the project, I don't think it would be something I would feel comfortable with.
I think we're starting to get a bunch of input with regards to that. We've got some of it on Tuesday with regards to the plan for going on the water project. The class at MSU that I was at this morning, several of the students focused on Veterans Park and some treatments of that area were as well too. I think we could do that. I agree with Ray. I see that as a separate project where we really should kind of figure out exactly how we want to do that as part of the park and spend some time mm-hmm. focused on that, whether it's the Boyne on the Water project, some of our original Boyne Waterfront project, or some of these other concepts that came up from MSU. I think the commission, the planning commission, and we as a community should have a discussion as to what happens back there.
And I think the one thing that, you know, we all were talking about some different things, like the economies of scale with a project like the Veterans Park. There's certainly economies of scale with this too. I mean, while we're out there doing paving, that paving's not going to happen until likely the end of next summer into the fall before this time next year is really what the thought would be. So I think that there's potentially time to capture it and get it in this project and still have economies of scale with the work that's going to be done there. So I don't think it's, I mean, I think it's something that should be maybe discussed more and figure out how do we want to try to incorporate it. Because we can do what's called a bullet, and you, after the contract's awarded, you can issue drawings and have somebody price it. You don't have to take it. It's called a bulletin. So we can still, we have avenues within a project to do this depending on where the budget comes out and everything else. But for the initial project bid, which was is going to take place in January, we're not going to be in a position that we'll have done our due diligence, is the bottom line. But to say that we can't do it in the summer or bring it in, I think if it's something that the commission's serious about, then it'd be one of those things that we should kind of get a game plan and be moving on into the late winter time frame so that we could try to see where things go with it. So,
Ray, I know we're going to be talking about bidding a little bit later on, but just generally, when the your vision of when the project is bid, is it bid as a lump sum project, or is it like on a per unit cost? Well, or we could add or subtract pavement or curbing or things of that nature if we wanted to put something in later.
We could request as part of the bid proposal form to have unit cost for certain things.
Okay, so, that might so be a way to do it.
And I would
keep options open.
I'd want to talk to C2AE and see what their thoughts are on that too, because generally that's not a big volume. So again, if you were doing a large parking or road or something, I think you might get better pricing if it was bid as what it is, because of, as opposed to when they do unit costs, it's more we're going to add fairly small increments. It's not thinking you're going to add, you know, a large yardage of paving, for example. So I think it's something to talk about, keep on the radar for sure. And if it's something that we want to, you know, move a little faster or move into, again, I don't think it happens in the January time frame, but I think it could happen in the scope of the project potentially.
Are we okay? Any questions? Yes.
Great that we're going to do a snow melt system, you know, the sidewalk and around the back. What is the power source going to be for the snow melt?
It would likely be gas-fired boilers. I'd have to double-check that question. I mean, it would be a boiler system, but I'm guessing based on the area, it's going to be gas-fired boilers. So.
Have we priced that out? The reason I ask is we did that at the bank, and it was a lot more expensive than we thought it would be.
To run it?
To run it.
Okay. Yeah. The firm that's designing it is Neos Engineering, and they've done a number of them around, but I'll certainly try to ask them for a kind of a cost idea. Gas, are you gas or electric?
It's electric.
Electric's going to be a lot more expensive for sure than gas, and that's why I'm saying I'm certain that we're not doing electric here for that reason, because it is very electric is not as efficient, just very expensive. So,
Hugh, were you on the Housing Commission board when they installed some of that?
Nope.
ET? It seemed like they put a boiler in for the one up at Litzenberger too. They might have some experience we could check.
Just so you know the numbers.
That's yeah,
but no, but I. That's why I asked the question about gas and electric, because electric is, especially for the area we're going, it's not going to be the way to go for us. So,
yes, Ron.
How are you dealing with stormwater runoff that you're going to have off these parking lots in the building?
The idea is going to be to create a sediment trap or a rain garden type of feature out in the back here, because ultimately this water, there is multiple oil separators in the building that will be catching oil from vehicles and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think we've got maybe one or two that we don't actually even need to have by code, but we're putting in just to make sure that we're accommodating that. But there's certainly oil separators that are part of the building, and then this is not shown on this drawing, and C2A is still developing the details on it, but the idea is to put this rain garden feature out in the back here. It's going to end up looking like a landscape depression. It may have water in it. If it stays wet, it actually grows a lot more. In the past, when we've done them, it's something that potentially will have to get cleaned out because of the sediment, because that's what it's there for, is we want to try to capture the dirt and sand that comes off vehicles, but that's the idea. So the idea is to certainly make it better than where it is currently, which is not the best, so polite, being polite. But I know that in our discussions with C2AE, some of the other projects that they're doing in town, they've been kind of installing these things. I don't know the exact projects, Andy would know them, but you know, we had these discussions. They mentioned that they've already started to implement some of these in town. So,
Mike?
The walkway in front of the building, is it the same? The graphic appears like it narrows down from the walk that we have through Veterans Park.
This
walkway. No. Go out where you were, out on the street. Yeah, right there. Street. As that continues,
going north.
Direction that is. Does that stay the same width, or does it narrow down as the graphic suggests?
I'd have to double check. I think it's just a graphic in this case that that's the drawing. I would imagine that we're matching the same
width. I think it should be at least as generous as the current.
Sure, no, that's a good comment.
I see more traffic coming in that direction in the future as we link all this across the whole town and not have a narrow restricted walk in that area.
Referring to that, Mike, speaking on the trails coming in from Michigan, are we going to be utilizing that strip? Maybe?
Probably.
So we would want 10 foot?
That would be desirable.
To keep a 10 foot walk across there?
If it indeed is the link between North Boyne, the trail coming in from North Boyne.
My recollection of those discussions were that we were going to try and have the trail closer to the water. Get it off the off the route.
Now that would be desirable if we can combine all that along the water.
Yeah, because I mean, when we brought it in, we kind of stopped had the trailhead at the north boat main boat launch, and I think the committee's goal was to try and take it as close to the water, and make it a more enjoyable ride rather than just ride along the side of the stream. So
that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Anything else? I think you did just maybe conclude the topic about the Little League point is our directives from the very beginning was we weren't really going to touch any of that, which you haven't. So I think you followed the directives that we gave you way back at the beginning of this process. That was kind of a hands-off territory. Ken?
Tom, my question is, do you have any inclusion of lighting and power additions that may be included in here, internet, other things. I think of are there ideas of having stands in places where electric cars could plug in and that kind of thing?
I have done projects where we've had electric car charging stations. It's not something that has been requested at this point for this project. So I would suggest if that's something that the public's interested in, that they maybe let the commissioners know, because that's fairly easy to put in, but we do not have electric car charging stations included at this point. So as far as lighting, everything, all the lighting that's gonna be on the facility will be LED lighting essentially, which is great because every month that passes essentially, the technology gets better, and even a few years ago we weren't able to include LED to the level that we're doing it. The new DPW has LED lighting throughout, so that tremendously reduces the lighting loads in general, so that's going to be a really good thing. And then as far as any public power or anything, as a separate project, there's some things being worked on for the Veterans Park Pavilion. They're raising money right now, but nothing specific to exterior power on City Hall. But the lighting, the streetscape lighting, the intent is to bring the streetscape lighting that's currently happening on Lake Street down into North Street as well. And then the building lighting will be a little bit different that's happening on the building. Not necessarily be the acorn type lighting that they have there, so.
Oh, Tom?
Yes.
So back to your comment, I can appreciate what you're saying there about, not dealing with the ball field, but what I'm worried about, and especially after the presentation on Tuesday, if we don't look at the whole park, we're just taking these little segments of it, how is it all coming together? Like for the marina, they were recommending a rather large parking lot, and it just seems like at some point it would be good to take a whole look. Okay, we have this, but how are other pieces going to fit as we move along in the park is a concern I have.
Who would like to address that? Scott or Mike or Ray?
Well, I think it's appropriate what Hugh's suggesting for sure to be looking at things holistically. I think it's from day one, it's been out there, and there's new things happening. This new property that was acquired that was not even in the picture a year ago. So I think that at some point in the near future, it would be a good thing to do to look at. I mean, we've got a lot of elements within the park, whether it be the pavilion, the playground, you know, the Veterans Memorial, I would presume is not going to, you know, change. So we're going to have, no matter what project you have, there's always going to be some fixed things. Is the baseball field a fix? You know, when we did the visioning sessions, you know, a year or two ago, as you said, it was a, that was loud and clear that people didn't want that ball field messed with it. At least there was a good segment of the people who participated in that activity. So I think that some additional public visioning and planning work to tie all that together would be appropriate. So, and when that occurs, I think that what we're doing with the parking, what we're doing with the emergency services, again, we're really trying to focus, I feel, this development as close and on Lake Street as possible, so it really doesn't affect the body of the park per se. So, and again, this is not going to move, presumably, so we have that nice kind of, this little axis that kind of ties you into downtown. I think that stays relatively flexible with some of the circulation, but I think you really have the whole area through here to, you know, come up with a future plan. I think it's a great area. I, you know, not knowing what's going to happen to the north and then to the adjacent parcel to the north, it really, the waterfront is its own entity that deserves some additional thought without a doubt. So.
I'd agree with you with regards to that. I mean, we do want to take a holistic look at this. I think that's one of the advantages of having Ray, who's worked with us and had the public input or perspectives from, as we started with the pavilion project, and you know, got a lot of these public views. I don't think anything that is being proposed here with regards to the city facility site itself or the improvements that we're looking at on North Street are incompatible with any of the other versions that I've seen floating around for or any of the other park improvements. Still leaves us all the options. I mean, again, we're not investing any significant amount of money with regards to the parking or the existing situation or on any direction around the ball field or from North Street west of where the curb and gutter is going to stop. I mean, and I think all of those components do need to be looked together, and I think they'll tie into with what we're doing here. If there was anything that would possibly change, if I could borrow this for a sec, is if for some reason in the future we did want to, let's say we did want to get rid of this and we came up with another plan where we did want to go back to the original version and extend this parking lot back this way or something of that nature, then we'd have one curb line along here that would have to be removed and redone. But I would see that'd be the extent of it. So I don't think anything else boxes you into anything.
Or you would, I mean, I would even leave a green space in between. I mean,
you could if you put in aisles or something like that.
That was one of the improvements that we thought to this parking arrangement, is it actually reduced.
We're
taking away that, you know, big box store parking lot kind of effect, which nobody wants, period. I mean, there's a benefit to have a lot of parking on the water, and there are some good things about that. But I think that to maintain a lot of parking along North Street and really starting to engage the water in the park and so forth. But again, I think it's something that maybe at the first of the year we try to figure out if we want to assemble, you know, another partner into the team to really start looking at future things and how we might be able to tie it in the project. I don't think that would be inappropriate. And I think that, you know, that would be something that suggests that we look at the first of the year to say if we, you know, we'll know where the, or after the first year, so 1st of February, we'll know where the project budget comes in, we'll know what dollars we have, what kind of, you know, what we're looking at in real costs here, and then it'll kind of maybe allow us to make some additional decisions and go from there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so barring no more questions on the site, we're going to go ahead and then we'll leave that existing asphalt. It's going to be the game plan, and as Mike suggested, if it turns out that through planning or some other desire, we'll be able to just remove that accordingly. So we'll keep that as is. Floor plan wise, in your packets, I have included the current floor plans, and again, we really haven't been changing things much at all over the course of this process. I guess what I'm going to do is I'm going to jump to the next The next item was titled floor finishes as well. So what I would suggest for everybody, including department heads and commissioners and the general public outside, there's material samples that kind of go along with this color-coded floor plan. That's in your packet. That's been here for a couple weeks now, and the intent is to leave it out for people to really study it and look at it as they wish. We had a good opportunity earlier in the summer to have several of the commissioners and Cindy and Serena, who were kind of acting as the finish representatives, I guess, for the city, for lack of a better word. So we had a nice group of about 6 to 8 of us that walked through and saw several different projects that we had completed recently and a lot of different materials. And so we, at that time, came to some pretty good consensus as far as what we thought the materials should be. And again, I would encourage you to look closer at those drawings. I'm not going to try to get into a whole ton of depth, but the bottom line was there's a fair amount of polished concrete, which is going to be a pretty durable and serviceable long-term floor material that's happening. That's really what all this kind of brownish color that's happening here. In the office areas, there's a couple different kinds of carpet that we're using. These light blue areas are also carpet. That's going to help acoustically to break things down in the lobby areas. And then we have a couple areas of carpet in some of the meeting rooms. And there's a great deal of concrete in this building, which is, again, it's going to be very serviceable long term. The commissioners that were on the tour with us saw several different buildings and several different applications, from a lobby of the YMCA in Traverse City to staff areas at a health department building in different uses. Grass River Natural Area, we did polished concrete or sort of polished concrete there. So we've done quite a bit of it over the years, and it's really a no wax, good, cost effective, long term solution. So you'll see a lot of that in the new structure. And then on the second floor of the building, there's going to be a lot of carpeting up there, and that's going to help us acoustically. And the idea is that by the time people have come in from the street with snowy boots or dirty boots, they've kind of lost it between the heated sidewalks are going to help with that. The hard surfaces and the walk-off mats that will be included in the lobby areas. And then by the time you get up the stairs, that'll be a fairly clean area up there, so that we have quite a bit of carpet happening up there, which is, again, it's also going to help us acoustically. So what I'll do is just kind of walk through some of the enlarged plans that just show different areas. So this is not the easiest thing to read, so why don't I, there's more detail in these drawings, so I apologize, I'm kind of jumping back and forth, but this will show us a little bit better as to what's happening. So this is the front entry. There's going to be a vestibule, and then inside the lobby, we've got these carpeted areas, which will have a couple soft seating areas. This side is administration. This side is the police. The idea is, and I'll show you some graphic images that we have, but the idea is that somebody's going to walk in the building and with some color-coded kind of graphics, they'll be able to see the police signage in the police desk. And then on the other side, we're going to have a similar situation where we'll have the museum and, oops, too far there. So we have the museum in this area, and then, which is this whole area here, is the museum. This area is administration. The plans that we've had out for at least 6 months really have moved inches back and forth as we're getting materials, finishes. We've met with all the staff, different departments, several occasions to determine cabinetry, electrical requirements, all different kinds of things. So there's been a lot of staff input. So we feel really good that we've done that. We're probably going to have one more meeting at the beginning of December with staff after Thanksgiving, just to one last chance to make sure there's no surprises for anybody. So we'll be looking forward to that. I guess what I'll do is I'll show the image of the, and these will be fixed images, which we're going to get these cleaned up just a little bit, but and then you can put it on the website, Cindy, as far as that goes. But so this is an image of the lobby, and the colors, they're not rendering properly, so we're still working through the colors. But the bottom line is that there's some large steel beams that are happening structurally And what we're going to do is wrap those steel beams with wood so they look like wood beams. Just, we're trying to bring a kind of cottage sort of refined feel to this, trying to play off the timbering, lumbering history in Boyne City, but also make it have a civic appeal. But there's, so there's going to be a fair amount of wood in the lobby only, and then down through some walls in here. The doors will all be wood, but this is kind of showing you what we were talking about. When you walk in the door, that there'll be some graphics and some colors that'll say, this is the police department. And then we have on the other side, the same thing that'll happen. And we have, you know, something that'll happen for the museum and then the city offices. And the idea is that if somebody wandered over to the city office area and said, I'm here to pay a ticket or I have a question for the police, they can say, go over to the red desk over there, which, again, if I flip the image back, you know, you'll see a red desk, or, you know, so there'll be some strong visual graphic image that'll take place with that. Again, disregarding the colors, there'll be a lot of nice wood finishes, beautiful windows in the front lobby here, and then the second floor, which is happening up here, is in front of the commission chambers. So let me go back. So a few key points that we've talked about. We want to have an informational television that would be displaying some things in this lobby area. There's been a discussion about having an informational kiosk that'll happen there. We're having some city record type functions that'll occur in this area so that people could get files or drawings or whatever it might be from planning, city staff, and actually have some tables here to work. So we almost envision this being kind of like a lobby or a library type of arrangement here. So very welcoming, very open. The same sort of thing will happen over on this side where there's going to be some soft seating. So people, I mean, I see this being a space before a meeting, after a meeting, during the day that you might find people really hanging out in this area. We have a couple bathrooms here that are, I believe the intent is to leave this building open for all hours, essentially. So we have the police department, which will be occupied. There's this area here. We're looking at a possibility of a roll-down screen for evening or a security grill so that, you know, if this lobby was open, the only place you'd be able to get into is in the lobby. You'd be able to look in windows at the museum. There would be roll-down security screens at administration, and there's, of course, bulletproof things happening at the area, the police reception area there. These doors, we're working through the details on this right now, but these big wood doors, the idea is that these are going to be able to be closed off at night too. The doors take you up to the second floor commission chambers and some meeting spaces, and MSU extension is slated for up there, and then the elevator would be right here, so that could be locked off at night. So the idea is that, again, all hours we could have a situation where we could leave that front lobby open and it would be usable by the public as required, and that'll just be a determination that the city will have to make as far as what they want to maintain as far as services there. So let me just run through a few of these departments. Again, not big changes, but I'll try to highlight any thing that may have changed here.
You remember, we've got one commissioner who's fairly fresh to these plans, so
sure.
Okay. If there's anything you know, I want to follow up on.
Well, the opportunity to meet with Ray really helped, so I feel...
I spent time last week, met with you for an hour or two, and we really walked through everything to try to bring him right up to speed on what's happening. So, again, for the benefit of the public as well, so this is our floor plan, Lake Street, North Street. So this quadrant here is city administration. So that's a pretty easy one. Let me just go to that one first and take care of that. So that little wing would be city administration. There's a public or a more of a shared meeting room that will happen here. You have, let me zoom in on this. I apologize, it's quite bright. Okay, so specific to administration. So we have a shared meeting room, the reception counter, there'll be racks for forms and so forth. These dashed lines indicate where we will have that security grill so they can close this off at night and maintain security. There will be a door now so that the general public will be coming to this reception desk to do business as opposed to walking back to people's offices. But then the idea would be that staff, whether it be planners or any department, individual will be able to come out and either meet with the people at the counter or meet with them in the shared conference area, or if it was real informal, again, we've got some nice tables out in that lobby where people could have informal meetings even. So that's going to be a really nice setup that's happening there. Really, we just have the run of offices around the perimeter of this space, and then we have a copy area that could also be accessed through the museum, so that if Michelle or whoever might be handling museum functions will be able to kind of easily access that. Some improvements we feel from the museum standpoint. What you're seeing in the dashed areas here is the reuse of all those existing display cabinets that they currently have. This is a column that's a structural column, but the idea was to cover that with hopefully some joined brick, or we'd really like to reclaim brick somewhere from town and clad this column with the brick. There's a lay-in ceiling 2x2 similar to this. This is 2x4, but if you look out on that table, there's a really neat product that looks like tin ceilings, but it's actually acoustical ceiling. So take a look at that. That's what we're using in the museum, and actually in the upper lobby area. It's just kind of a neat little touch that I think people will appreciate when they see that. We've got some built-in display areas happening here with the big glass doors essentially. So that's going to be a huge improvement, is if there's things that we don't want people touching and so forth. And we've been working with Laura and Michelle and some of the other museum folks to kind of get some feedback as far as what we're doing in the museum. And then also weaving a large area for things like the dental chair display and some of the other artifacts that are currently housed in the museum. This wall here, the idea again is to find some reclaimed wood that we can get locally from a building or a barn or something, so we'd have some reclaimed wood that would act as kind of a backdrop. And then this window is going to kind of act as a display somewhat from the street, which, let me go back to 3D here. So that would be on Lake Street. So this group of windows here will be something that as people are driving by, you'll get a glimpse of, you know, maybe some mannequins with old clothes, but also would provide an opportunity for people walking on this pathway be able to walk down a sidewalk. These sidewalks are necessary for emergency purposes anyways, for egress out of the building, but it'll give people an opportunity to walk up and look in the storefront window, if you will, of the museum. And at the same time, you know, we've not lost the La France display, so the idea was always to have some kind of linkage with our sidewalk out to the where the La France is. So not only will people driving by be able to appreciate the La France, but people who are jogging or walking along the street will be able to also kind of come up and look at things. There's not going to be an entry to the museum from this side. It's only emergency exit. Both of these doors are emergency exit doors. So kind of a much needed improvement, I'd say, to what we currently have here. In terms of, you know, we'll have a single controlled entrance where it can either be locked or open. There's some what we call borrowed lights, which are essentially interior windows. So the staff that's at the front end will be able to look out and kind of keep an eye on the museum. We've also added a window in this office. So there's several offices that will be able to directly kind of keep an eye on what's happening in the museum if it's not staffed. And we are making provisions for computers and desks and so forth to be able to be moved into a few different spots, so that if there was a more permanent person, there's actually an opportunity to have a little office area within that museum proper. So we're really pleased with that. And again, the museum is accessed directly off the lobby. And going back to that image we were looking at, you know, one of the first things you see when you walk in the building will be the signage for the museum and glass. And, you know, the idea is to attract people who come in to do city business to, you know, take in the museum while they're here. So that's going to take us through that area. Looking at the police and the EMS, so on the opposite side of the lobby, so we have our public toilets, we have the other half of the lobby. There's a shared conference room again that can occur at this point. This one will be a little bit more secure, obviously, in relation to the police department. There's another conference room that's going to be dedicated to the police department behind here. We have reception area, squad room, toilets and showers for the officers. the garage and actually enough room for an evidence lockup, which was something that was requested. So that's going to be a huge improvement. I know that they're starting to do a lot more bike patrols, so we've got provisions for bikes storage in the garage as well. And then a couple offices, and again, the squad room and some of the other ancillary functions of armory and evidence storage and so forth, that's actually going to be able to take place in their department, which is kind of spread out in different areas right now. Moving to the northwest corner, this would be the EMS area. So we've got our vehicle base for the EMS, and then essentially the living quarters, which would be men's and women's bunk space, bathrooms, kitchen, day room for the folks that are staffing that department. And then there's some storage space and an office for that area there. And that walkway that I mentioned, this drawing doesn't do a really good job of showing it. Let me go back to you. So this is the EMS garages right now. When I mentioned that we were going to be walking through into there, we've got a kind of a covered vestibule here and then an enclosed vestibule, being that it's on the north side of the building and we'll see a lot of wind off the lake. So the idea is staff can be coming into here and then coming into whatever department where they need to go. So this corridor really links the building front to back and will provide, you know, clean egress through there. The other thing that I didn't talk about, which again has been on the plans for a long time, but I want to reiterate this function, is you know, potentially after hours or not during regular time, anytime, we've got a really nice shared meeting room here that has a connected kitchen. We'll look at the fire department in a second. This connects on to the fire department, but the idea is that this is a shared meeting room that would be perfect for Boy Scouts, 4-H, or whatever other sorts of meetings that are mid-range or mid-sized meetings, you know, upwards of 50 people type of thing that could happen in a space like this. There's a family toilet. What we always do now is provide provisions for, you know, baby changing stations and a place to be able to have a parent and a toddler. So we do have that bathroom happening there. And again, coat storage, kitchen area. It's going to be quite a nice area. So this is all off that central core. So it's very, very efficient as far as how we would, you know, be able to lock the building down or make it available to the public. It's going to be really nice. And we've just kind of, again, continued to enhance things as we've worked through this. Moving on to the fire department. So this would show the apparatus bay arrangement here, this hatched area that's happening, which is probably a little bit hard to see from the audience there, but that's a mezzanine area. So on the west side of that mezzanine, there's going to be some mechanical equipment. The middle area is going to be a storage area. We did add a stair to that. Yeah, so we added a stair to that mezzanine to make it a little bit more accessible, because the idea, this is going to be really quite a neat feature here, is so on this east end of the mezzanine, there's going to be essentially a training area. If this ladder truck was backed up, the firefighters were going to have a false window essentially, so that the firefighters during the winter will be able to train, you know, with their gear, climbing through windows and that sort of thing, right within the apparatus space, which is going to be really neat. There is a fire pole in there for training, and then the idea is that, you know, I think the intent is to bring the kids from the community into the department and really, you know, show them the LaFrance, show them the trucks, give them the potential opportunity to slide down a fire pole. So there's going to be a lot of neat things that happen there. This is the training room for the fire department staff, and that also links up with the kitchen. So the idea is going to be, again, for pancake breakfasts or chicken dinners or whatever it is, we're going to have some really great facilities for the firefighters to be able to do what they do. So that you haven't seen, and it's this little push up, but really it created a nice situation, because this little covered vestibule out here, we just had to move the whole apparatus bay up 6 feet, and it didn't change anything else. Still have storage and equipment rooms, the offices and everything that we've always planned. So. And if anything, it probably might give us an opportunity to put more windows potentially looking in. One of the things that we're talking about, as Mike mentioned, and I've got it on my list here, is the bell and the clock. So we've talked to a few different companies. The last company we talked to The first one was very impressive. They came up and looked at the clock, but the last one we talked to was clearly impressive and knowledgeable and actually have experience working on this exact model of clock and bell. And further, they've restored a couple, and they have their pricing. The first company that we talked to essentially said, you don't want to restore it. You want to go to Electric Strike and kind of modernize the equipment. And their price to do that was upwards of $75,000. These are round numbers that they were throwing at us. And then to restore the clock and the bell and actually make it manually function as it was intended to do, they were shooting numbers over $125,000 to get that. So we were pretty discouraged at that point. Mike did a little bit more research, found out of another company. We ended up talking to them. They basically said, if you electrify the bell, we don't want to work with you. So they only wanted to work with you if you were going to do it back to a correct restoration. And so in talking through them, again, we had a very good discussion with them, a lot of great information, and then, you know, talking to them about what the price is, they're talking about $75,000 for the correct restoration, and that was kind of their, like, they didn't want to tell us number because, you know, they thought we were going to fall out of our chair when we'd been told $125 by somebody else. So we were actually pleasantly surprised that, you know, that was a pretty positive thing. At this point, we don't have a specific line item included in the budget for that bell restoration. You know, that might be one of the owner dollars that we have allocated, where we have several percent that we try to put aside for furnishings and different types of things. There's a really good opportunity, or through the contingency, that those dollars are available within the project, and we'll continue to explore that. So the idea with that was going to be, and the reason why I'm going to, you know, jump to that now, is there's a few things that need to happen. We have to have a pendulum pit, essentially, is the right way to do it. So we have a little drying room where there's the hose dryer for the fire department's going to go. We made some modifications so that we didn't detract from the LaFrance, essentially, display and so forth, looking into this room. And it actually makes it easier for them to bring hoses to the dryer and so forth. But the idea would be that where this hose tower is, which is something that we've been really proud of as this has developed, this tower replicates the original tower that once stood here in town. And additionally, we found some new pictures that had this little unit that actually held the bell. So what we're trying to do is bring back as close as we can that kind of configuration. So the idea would be that the bell would be in this little tower, and there's pictures that Mike has, and I don't know if they're on the website, but really cool pictures of the tower, and I don't think I have them with me, but let me see if I do, because that would be... I don't have it, but it'd be really nice if you could put that up. I think you do the website, right, Cindy?
No.
So Barb, you get Barb to put that on the website. It'd be really nice, but if you see the pictures of what's happening with what was once there, this is really coming together to bring that tower back, which is going to be really excellent. So the bottom line is that they have the workings of the clock want to be in a place where people can see it. So the thought is that we put it in this corner underneath the tower, because the way the clock works is that the workings of the clock will actually drive it. There's some cables and pulleys and shaft and things that will actually operate this clock face that's going to happen on all four sides. Be illuminated is what the idea is. So back to the floor plan. So back to the floor plan, the idea would be that the clock workings and the pendulum pit and so forth would occur in here, so that, again, as the fire department might be bringing kids into the fire department to show them things, that'll be an opportunity that they'll be able to see the working clock, which will be fabulous. And then what the 3D doesn't have it right now, but we've added a window into here so that people, again, from the outside can, you know, walk around, see the LaFrance, look through this window, see the clock working, see the pendulum swinging, actually. It's going to be pretty amazing. And it would kind of tie in with the museum, which is not directly connected. You'd have to walk through but the way that it's set up, so the museum's here, you'd have to walk through this space and come around to get into the where the La France and the bell tower would be. But again, when the fire department's having kids in, it's going to be a perfect opportunity to just bring them into that space and let them see some additional history with it that's from the city. So it's kind of fast developing, because when we put pits and we do things, we have to have this on our drawings, which are going out quickly. So this is a fast moving and developing thing, but we at least want to get the infrastructure in there for that. Additionally, with emergency services, we had some meetings with towers. So as people are looking at drawings and communications, they're gonna see some antenna and little things. And these are actually replacing a lot of the emergency antennas that are around. So we've got one here. There's another one that's back down there. We have one on the back side of the building here. We have one hidden back here. So there's several communications, emergency communications antenna that are gonna be located in the building. But again, we're trying to hide them as best as possible.
So those will replace like the actual towers that we have. I'm trying to remember how many we have, like three. I know that we have one behind the police department, one behind the fire hall.
There's a total of four that we had to replace.
There's four existing.
So, and then the other thing that was done as kind of an in-construction thing during the DPW process when we were having these meetings is that there's a possibility of a new 911 tower that could go up at North Boyne. They're really excited about that location because of its elevation. Right now, I think they're bouncing signals to East Jordan and then back, or it's a pretty convoluted route right now. And so that's something that is not part of this project, but we did put a conduit and some infrastructure in to accommodate that new 911 tower, which would be another benefit to the community. So,
and the reason that's being discussed is another one of the towers that's behind, or one of the towers that's behind the fire hall has some 911 equipment on it already. So that would be when this building comes down, it would potentially be relocated up there.
So the last piece is the emergency siren. So that would be located above the clock here. That's what this louvered area was. We were looking at, you know, where are we going to put that emergency siren? So that's going to be hidden up in the highest point in this tower, which will be really quite nice. And it's a very discreet, again, that you don't really see it. So that's a very positive thing that's happening there. Moving on to the upper level. So the upper level, this is showing the east half of the upper level. So we have our lobby looking down into the main lobby. This is the upper lobby. Here's the stairs that go down to the lobby, elevator, museum storage, administration type storage, files, voting machines, and so forth will happen on this area. This area right now is allocated for MSU extension, so that's always been the plan, and that's what we're showing there. And then we have an exercise room shown up in this area here. This will be bid along with the corresponding section on the upper level as an alternate, just to be safe. It doesn't take us much to be able to bid it as an alternate. And it, right now, the way the budget's looking is everything appears to be on track from where we originally started. So that's very positive, but I still like to have opportunities that if we needed to cut dollars, we have opportunities to cut dollars. So if you look at this drawing, you'll notice how those two wings disappear in the option. So that's gonna be an alternate that's bid. We don't think it actually changes the look terribly of the building, but the cost for that, those two wings, is gonna be upwards of $250,000. So to have that option available to us if we needed to cut $250,000, we think is a prudent thing to do. So. Right now, the plan is to keep those areas in place. It would only be removed at the direction of the commission or if we ran into dollars issues. So basically, that would be usable by police department, fire department, whoever wanted to use that. So that's what we're showing there now. And then moving to the opposite side, which would be another alternate that we have going on, I'll show you in a second. So we've got public restrooms again, upper lobby, looks down into the lower lobby, a really nice array of windows, which we'll look at in a second. another medium-sized meeting room that would occur up there. That would be another shared meeting room. There's a little staff break area that's a little kitchenette, which would also serve as events that would take place in the commission chambers of the auditorium sort of space that we're in now. Beautiful views of the lake. And then what we're looking at is another alternate to do a rooftop patio and some green roof space out on this area here. So that would be directly adjoining the commission chambers. So whatever type of events that might be happening, it's going to create a really neat opportunity to A, look out to the lake, look out to the park. It's really going to reinforce that whole connection to that part of the property. And then where we're kind of looking at right now, image-wise, for the commission chambers. So this would be a view looking out towards the lake. There's wood trusses are happening on the upper level, but we're going to have what's called scissor trusses and some opportunity to have some vaulted space inside the commission chambers. You'll notice the TV on a large TV is planned for the back wall so that a presentation like this could be, there'll be a TV that the community can look at. And then there'll also be a couple of TVs placed on either side of the bulkhead. So there's one here and then one on the opposite sides of the commissioners will also have the opportunity to look at it. Again, beautiful windows, beautiful finishes. It's going to be really quite nice. One of the questions that we had is, do we want to have a fixed commission tables, or would we like to make that more movable and flexible? So this drawing shows it as being more of a fixed situation. It would offer a little less flexibility in the future. So this is showing more perhaps a movable table kind of situation like we have now in chairs. You know, we have storage room to accommodate some stacking chairs and so forth directly off this room. So that was one of the questions that I also wanted to throw out today. It just, when we were doing the images, we looked at it a few different ways, and that was just something that we thought would look nice. The other view of that room, so this would be the doors going out to the lobby. These are the doors on the right-hand side that go out to that patio. Again, the colors are off, but the idea is that there'll be a wood ceiling that would wrap down back on this wall. So some nice touches, a lot of drywall, but we're trying to bring in some wood finishes where we tend to dress things up. And that's really only happening in the lobby, in the commission chambers. The rest of the office spaces are going to be very, very nice, but much simpler as far as finishes go. So that kind of is my last question, and that kind of ran us through the floor plans. So if there's any questions people have about floor plans or functions or anything else, and let me just show you one more drawing here. I want to do a cutaway of the, I mean, so this kind of gives you a sense of what that lobby space will look like. So from up above, all those beautiful windows that you see looking out over to the park are going to be viewed, you know, from that upper level lobby, as well as being able to look down into it. That would be the doors of the commission chambers there, and that's kind of what it looks like from above. So that it's hard to tell sometimes in these drawings, but the idea is that there'll be a lot of nice air and communication happening through there. But really, this, you know, spectacular row of windows. And if I go back to the no cut option here outside the building, so this, you know, beautiful array of windows is really going to be a special thing when you go in the lobby, and from both upstairs and downstairs, it's going to be a really fabulous space. So questions on the floor plan and any comments on the commission chambers in particular, I'd appreciate.
Go ahead, Laura.
I guess my personal feeling is with the new facility that the commission chambers, I think it would be nice if it was a stationary. And I almost feel, and I don't want to make it sound lofty, I almost think it should be raised slightly, not maybe a large step up, but just a minor height increase, height-wise. That's just my personal feeling. I know in other cities that I've been in where they have that set up. Also, if you're going to, you know, hardwire in any kind of microphones or anything like that, I think just the simplicity of having it, the solid structure is kind of nice. It just seems, because it's a little more permanent feeling than just tables like these are. Not that I mind these, I mean, they function and...
Again, there's no right, this is not a right or wrong thing, it's really going to be...
That's just my impression, I think it just looks a little more finished and solid and permanent that way. I like all of the lighting, and I do like the two side wings, and I'm wondering, I know that's a cost factor and that may or may not come to pass, but those spaces on those wings that are added in, I think could be used for public spaces quite often, and I think they would be well used by the public and be able to generate some income for the use of those spaces.
Yeah, because this is a nice size meeting room there.
Right.
And again, the way that this would function is even if there was something happening here, you could go out onto this space.
Right.
They didn't turn out, it's still a very nice size space out on that patio, and it's certainly going to be able to accommodate, mm-hmm. 30 to 50 people out there. But
right.
The cost wasn't as bad as I expected either. We had just completed another project, so we were using the real numbers from that project. And we're looking at roughly... The cost for those spaces, which again would be bid as alternates, should be somewhere in the neighborhood of basically the paver area was around $25,000 to $30,000, and the green roof was more expensive than the paver area, and that'll be around $25,000 or so. So what we're showing right now is green roof surrounding the perimeter because we want to keep people away from the edges.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The things. We still will have a railing, but we just have done that successfully, and then we had a little green roof here, so that when you're in the commission chambers, you'd be looking over, nicer than a dirty membrane roof. Basically, ultimately long term, what'll happen there.
But I'm also talking about the two side wings that.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, those, and I think those would be really usable spaces for a lot of different meetings for groups and organizations and
right
that
now,
type of thing too. That. We don't have a lot of those kind of spaces in town. I mean, the library provides some in the senior center and whatnot, but I think if it were here, it would be well used.
And the budget is, as it stands and where we're looking right now, we're expecting that we should be on track to be able to do that in place.
Right.
And the nice thing is between there's three what we call shared meeting rooms downstairs, and then you'd have two up here.
Right.
So there's potentially five shared meeting rooms. We've seen it work in other government types of facilities where people plan and a system comes to happen in place, and it's really quite effective, and you'll find people able to meet in multiple areas, public able to meet, so there's a lot of positive things happening with that.
Mm-hmm. I'm really torn with regards to what the setup should be in the commission chambers auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of going back to what Laura was talking about with some of those side rooms, I can really see that room much the way this room is, or much the rooms at the Charlevoix Library are, or the community room at our library is, used as a multi-purpose room. But my concern is if we put something permanent up there as the dais that we can't swing away or reconfigure some other ways, it's really going to limit the use of that room. It's always going to look like a commission chambers or a meeting room. If somebody wanted to have, let's say we wanted to have a wedding up there, the mayor's exchange reception or something of that nature. This room we can even in its basic manner that it is currently, we can reconfigure this multiple ways, whether it's us using it, the planning commission using it, we have a public forum, 4-H is using it for some of their functions or whatever, fire department's using it for training, everybody's using it for everything. Because we've been able to move everything.
I guess what I like about that look is I like more of the solid front look for some reason as a commission.
But we might be able to get furniture that's a lot different than this that has that.
Rather than table type setup, maybe something that's modular sections, maybe with casters that could be rolled apart.
And that's kind of more like what we had in the original commission chambers. That's a little bit more formal than this is.
Right.
This is very informal.
Right.
What we've got in here, but we always figured this was a temporary setup.
So maybe instead of like something that's solid built in place, something that would be movable but looks like it's solid built in
place,
I guess is kind of maybe more of maybe the direction we should go or could go.
As much as I agree with you, Laura, as much as that one conference room up there would be used for multiple uses, if we had the ability to reconfigure that room for whatever it is, much like we do with this room, I think the public's going to go wild for that thing.
Yeah.
And the view is going to be great. I mean, really, the whole idea was to capture, you know, from this room, you're going to look back over the park, the ball field, you know, out to the lake. It's going to be quite a nice space. We'll have some window treatments so people pay attention to the front of the room and not the outside.
We'll be able to enjoy the view that we've given the seagulls all these years.
That's true. I have one other minor thing, and you're probably going to hate that I bring this up, but on the museum portion, I know I pushed for having an entrance, and I see that we do have one, which is fine. But my question would be is where the stairwell is on the right, could we not just have a door that goes into the museum, or not into, but as an emergency exit door at that point, and eliminate the one on the left?
You cannot have doors entering into an emergency stair. So we
You can't, okay.
Because when you're going down a stair, they don't want you to go through a door. So that would be the only issue. So you're saying adding a door here.
Right, where if that's a landing as you come in,
and
it's already there, just
the only
because that door wouldn't be used maybe very infrequently.
Let me check, because we may be able to move this stairway back and create essentially a vestibule here. In that case, we could have that floor.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, and then not have one over there, so that, say, school kids were coming to a museum tour, we wanted to bring them a group in that way by the clock, where they could see into the clockworks, and then come into the museum. Might be a little more advantageous because of, you know, the walkways there anyway, but
I think
a thought.
If we create a vestibule, I think we might be able to make it work. The only thing that might end up happening is that we'd have to bump in like a little square so that the door swing of that door didn't impact anybody who's egressing.
The desk for the museum could go over in that other corner. I mean, it could go somewhere else.
And we had to, you know, kind of talked about going a few places, but no, I think that's a fine suggestion. And the thing I do like about that is, like you said, be a more direct route to get into, you know, out and around and walk.
Right, and go to the fire department around the corner and then into the museum and kind of do a tour that way. It might be just easier.
Yep, let me look at that, and I think that we should
be able
to
eliminate that other one totally.
We did make these larger from the comments that we talked about moving big things in. We did make this a larger door too. I believe this is an oversized door. It's 44 inches. This is also a 44-inch door here. What I think that I might suggest is we make this then a panel that could actually swing open too. So it'd be fixed most of the time, but if we needed to move something a little bit bigger, we'll look at doing that. So if that's okay to get rid of that door for moving things, then we'd just be moving stuff through the lobby, which I don't think is a big deal.
Or small things if we had to in the other way.
It's
just a thought. Okay.
Ron?
I guess my thoughts, go back to the commission chamber. What do we do with do we have a contingency plan for overflow? And looking at the configuration as we have it right there, it seems like it's set up for about 100 people. And the meeting room there on the west wing, I don't know, I guess you could be piping that into, you know, a big screen TV, but I'm just thinking of a clear view where, you know, if you had another 50 people that wanted to attend a meeting, it's...
So, with chairs only, by code, this room has 176 occupants.
176?
Correct. And that's based on square footage and how we calculate occupancy in a room. So this room is designed for 176 people in chairs.
I was looking at your rendering there and I counted up 90.
Look tight up.
But that's also taking the floor area and assuming that you're packing them in and, you know, not having the commission. You know, that's taking this area at the same rate that you would a seating area. So it's, you know, effectively, you could probably fit upwards of 150 to 175 people in a squeezed-in situation. Standing room only, you know, you'd have a lot more people, essentially. In a table and chair environment where if you were going to set chairs and tables up like when we did charrettes before, if you were having, you know, meetings or luncheon or something, it'll fit 82 people is what the design accommodates based on the 15 square feet per person that the code requires us to look at. So that just gives you an idea of where we are, and I think we were...
We also have the option of going it out there on the green roof, too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea was
if it was a summertime event, mm-hmm. we could get a couple,
and this one,
40 or 50 people out there.
This conference room with tables and chairs, believe it or not, mm-hmm. is 31 occupants, and if you basically double it for chairs only, so you could fit 50 mm-hmm. people in that room in this kind of configuration, which seems mm-hmm. not right, but it's just running the numbers by code on how it works. So, but back to your suggestions, yeah, I mean, certainly on a warmer day, I think you, mm-hmm. I don't know that you'd be lining up chairs out there because it'd be a way, but you'd certainly have people, I would think, able to stand around and so forth. So. Mm-hmm.
Paul? Yeah, I'm curious the size of the building. What's the footprint of that building compared to this building? So we can get a mental image as well as the total distance north to south of that building compared to this one.
Let me see if I can go back. The square footage of the new building is around 36,000 square feet, and that's everything. That's up both floors, all departments, fire apparatus bays, everything else. I should have pulled this out earlier because now I'm going to have to search for it. But
you found the rendering in the back of the room as well, too.
Does that show what this one is as well?
Yeah, it shows red dotted lines on that one, Paul. If you go back to that one that has the green square in the middle of it, it shows where the new building is. It shows the outlines for the existing buildings, and you'll see that everything, that kind of that bluish area is the new building. Mm-hmm. And it's all basically between the existing DPW fire garage and Lake Street. So everything's to the east of the existing DPW garage.
Yeah, it's
by about 10 feet.
And I have don't know that I have it with me, but we have, I can get the sheets out there. They were out there. I think they're on the city website, actually. There's some information that tells you what the square footage of actually the departments are, what they currently are, or what they're proposed as, and so forth. I apologize. I don't have it handy. But we have a sheet that basically, I know it's here somewhere, but I just can keep looking. But it's generally, I want to say that this existing building and so forth, and we've had so many numbers going around, I don't have it memorized, but it was in the neighborhood of 25,000 feet with all the facilities and so forth that we have. So then we've lost the DPW garage was included in there. I will dig that up. If it's not on the site or the website, I'll make sure that I get that so that she can post it, but I'm pretty certain it's in there because it was in the package for the vote and everything else. We had all that information in there, so I apologize that I don't have that immediately handy. But it's bigger by in the neighborhood of 30%, 25 to 30% bigger than what's existing.
But I think this question is footprint to footprint, aren't you? You're not talking about
it. That was part of it. I know it's going to be bigger because it's tall. I'm just curious, mentally, I know we're going to, block a lot of the view of the back, people going by, and I just was curious that, by how much.
Okay.
There actually were some number of the renderings that we provided earlier that showed the difference in the view corridors of the existing building and...
Well, this gives you, so we have the existing, so North Street is effectively staying as it is. So the space in front of the existing DPW building is getting improved. If you look at where the ball field is, that's about our line of demarcation. So we're gonna be, removing the paving outwards, out to the south of the existing DPW garage by probably 20 feet or so, and that's gonna be green space essentially in that area, which mm-hmm. then the parking that we're approving is happening here. So then when you look at where the existing building is, that distance across there, this will just give us some round numbers, is about 111 feet, and so you can see where my arrow is right there. So we're adding about 30 feet to the width of the building.
That's what I was looking for.
So that if you look at where that purple dot is, mm-hmm. that's where I started my grab. So we're adding about 30 feet to this direction is what's happening. And then on the other side, it's gonna be comparable. Let's see if I can. this spot here, it's virtually the same on that side. So it's really, width-wise, the difference is fairly, you know, it's
30 feet, 30, 40 feet.
We're actually, the new building's now moved over, 19 feet. So it's effectively a net add of 10 feet of width to this structure. So we're moving from where this building is, we're moving 20 feet to the north, and then
going another
10 feet beyond, or another 30 feet that way. So we're kind of, it's a net 10 feet difference, which is pretty negligible to what's existing. So it gives you a pretty good idea. It's virtually sitting on the footprint of the existing building. I had a drawing that shows that, and you know, you can see the building's set a little bit further off of Lake Street, so we're really just filling in the space in front of the existing City Hall, and we're really obviously improving all this that's happening back here, because again, when we look at the plan, you know, we've increased the open space tremendously, so.
Ken, you had a question earlier. Yes.
In relation to the first floor and back to the fire and potentially the police too, but the fire and rescue area, were there showers and a decontamination area?
There's showers in each of those spaces for cleanup, correct.
For fire and EMS, correct?
Individually, they have each have their own. And there's different, again, we work with the different staff for what they wanted and what was but the EMS has a wash area and so does the fire department.
Are there separate male and female showers?
The EMS has actual living quarters, so that there's a separate male and female living or kind of bathroom configuration. The fire department has a bathroom that's unisex and it's more for utility is what I'm going to say, and then they have access to the public bathrooms. Now, one of the charges that the City Commission's always kind of been trying to push in this project is that we have lots of shared facilities. We don't, you know, have duplication through departments as much as we can. So you'll see in the plans that that's, you know, really why we have such a nice, compact kind of public sort of zone right in the middle here. Because really, where that gray circulation is and then what's happening in the middle there, is all, that's all public areas, and you really just have these four kind of quadrants of departments that kind of join into it. But the idea is there is a bathroom in here, and that's it, but then the rest of the facility is to use the existing bathroom. So again, there's the EMS has to have their own because they have a living quarters kind of configuration. City administration does not have their own bathroom. They'll be using public facilities, the shared facilities.
So I guess if there were a situation that there was some event that required they must have kits or tents or something they could install outside the building or in the bay or something like that.
Correct.
It'd be something to be brought in.
And we discussed that in the event that there was a extreme contamination kind of situation. We're not trying to set up to handle that. We're setting up to handle washing, you know, soot and equipment and
right.
wash,
right.
you know, different things that the EMS are going to run into, but the idea was not to have, you know, toxic situation. That would have to take place and be a special circumstance for cleaning and everything else, so.
Which would take storage, maybe, but that's a different issue.
And we do have, again, that mezzanine, which is up on the space above here, is the intent is that that's going to be a place that there'll be an additional storage and space.
Yes, Mike?
Back to the commission room auditorium. I think the more flexible pattern has more general other use. And another thing, it sets up the fix thing sets up kind of a us against them,
mm-hmm.
an adversarial
mm-hmm.
kind of relationship. I sit in other commissions and mm-hmm. around the county and around the state, and it's an entirely different atmosphere than the one I receive in this room, the way
mm-hmm.
we are. I think we're pretty casual and we get the job done. Now, as soon as you put the barbecue and the bar are out on the deck. I got a lot of reasons to want to use this whole place.
Outdoor kitchen.
Back to the this room here, you show a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 stations, but our planning commission has 9 commissioners plus staff, so we just want to be able to have at least.
Besides the largest group that we're going to have.
Exactly. Good point. Is there any group bigger than that?
No, I'm trying to think of what's Main Street?
9.
Main Street's 9.
Are they 9?
Yeah.
They do have the ability under law to go larger than that. I think they can go up to either 11 or 13.
Which is where you would be with staff in a planning commission of 9, roughly with 2 to 3 staff. And I think, you know, that's something that, again, the flexible would give us the opportunity to bend around if we had to and that sort of thing. Well, I like the idea that you had of maybe that it's just the type of furniture that it is, you know.
That rolls easy and, yeah, it's movable, so. But it could look more solid than tables.
You kind of want consensus on that particular point?
I would, because if we're going to do something fixed, we do have to build it in, especially if we were to build it up 6 inches or whatever else, so.
The nice thing about fixed is you could have fixed electronics with the sound system. I do like the sound system, to be fair to the audience, because I know a lot of times you can't hear us, but.
And that, you know, as far as putting floor connections and so forth, that the intent would be to work some of that in, for sure. And as well, you know, tie the podium in with the screen so that, again, we're not projecting, we're just going to tie it in hard wire-wise to connect with television screens, which is, seems to be the best way to go, so that we're not dealing, you know, it's going to be more make a connection to a laptop that'll light up all the screens as opposed to doing, having to deal with a projector if somebody's laptop doesn't work. So that's kind of the idea right now would be to have those floor connections either fixed or if it was movable, we still line them up in that location. And I think that, you know, that we wanted to put it there so that you're not backlit by the sun when the sun's setting in the evening meeting in the summer and you've got, you know, so that would seem to make the most sense to put it on the north side of the room and have that nice backdrop and.
Also the TV, so.
If the TV's right behind us, how does Mike control it?
There'll be another one that we're looking out at. It'll be on the same circuit.
Right. So this would be the view from the commission, from the commission's viewpoint. So here's like sitting from a commissioner's viewpoint. And again, these are just relative drawings, but the idea is that we'd have televisions that are as big as we can get, basically up on the side there, so that you'll all be able to look at those TV screens.
Is there a reason we couldn't put one on the back wall too? And so we're just looking straight ahead, sure. So we're looking right at the audience and at the screen,
right.
Looking off to the sides like we're doing now.
Right.
I think we
less neck strained.
I would still
unless you want one right here.
No, I don't. I mean, one of the things we'll want to talk about either at the budget session or somewhere along the way is the format of our agendas. Whether we stay with, you know, we're kind of the quasi-paper electronic right now, and Cindy's had some initial discussion, she and Barbara are doing some research with regards to, okay, at some point, is the commission going to want to go to a more electronic thing where we have them on tablets and things like that you can bring, and that could be your television screen of some sort. So we just have to make sure we load you the images first. We'll have Wi-Fi throughout, so there'll be ways to get it. But that may be a different option for us. And I want to make sure that whatever we do is that we're not so locked into one technology, because, I mean, the way technology is changing, I mean, we wire for something today, it's going to be something different tomorrow. If you can set it up wirelessly, that's even better.
And that's how we're seeing a lot of stuff going. Even microphones and everything else can be done wirelessly, so. And I think that that brings up a good point is maybe what we do is add a television up high back here and we don't have the one behind the commissioner. Then I mean, I think if you think it's appropriate to have a large TV behind so that the audience.
Well, we're going to want something that the audience is going to look at. I don't know if we need the ones on the side so much.
We want that one to be right here so that they can look directly.
They can be looking at us and we can be looking at them. So we want
the
front and back.
Front and back, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I will probably still want to put ports on the side just in case we want to have something or change something in the future.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, are we ready to come to consensus on portable?
I would agree with that. Would you create a storage in the back there then, Ray, so you could hide them so the room could, they're just out of the way altogether?
Yeah, we have there's a few places. We have,
I like the idea of portable, but more of a furniture style rather
right.
than a table
yeah.
style.
Not as casual.
Maybe with a storage
something more formal.
Shelf underneath for papers or whatever we might want to.
So
there's a pretty good sized storage room right here, Hugh. That would be, the idea was that this storage room is not for like voting machines and stuff. This would be to move tables and chairs and so forth as much as we can. We also have this little area back in here that, you know, again, you could push things. I tend to discourage that just because it's going to be a nice open area for the lake. And, you know, when people walk into this room, they're going to walk right over to this side and stand out in front of there. This, you know, really what's going to happen, like before a meeting and everything else is what I would see happening. So, and then we've got a pretty nice sized storage room, and inside these mechanical rooms, there's some potential storage. So we've tried to create some decent storage up there that there's some flexibility depending on what the furniture. But today, the furniture is really nice. It nests really well. You can get carts. It's pretty efficient for stacking and moving and everything else. So,
Cindy?
And I like the portables personally because I can configure that room many ways to hold an election.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it only happens once, maybe four times a year, but
right.
I have certain legal guidelines of how far people have to be from each other.
I like that idea.
Okay, so consensus that we are given Ray direction to go with the
portable.
Formal.
Okay. And the furniture is not being bid in this package. We have a line item in our budget for furniture, but we don't have a
furniture. Uh-oh, you guys gotta go? Yes.
Yeah. Just like to think about considering the security aspect of portable versus a permanent. You know, you guys are it's pretty vulnerable up there. You know, this particular town. And if we don't have some kind of barrier, and I appreciate what Mike's saying, you know, the them versus us. However, I do like the separation because, I don't want to burst anybody's bubble, but I know that not everybody comes in this room is happy all the time. So, you know, sometimes there are going to be contentious situations, and I like the fact that, you know, if there's portable furniture that does the job, that's great. If there's a permanent way to do that to add some safety for the commission, the commissioners themselves, I'd like you to look at that.
Well, there has been national incidents, yes. At public meetings, yeah. Good point.
And one thing I might do to that effect is, you know, right now we have this door, which is kind of meant to act as a second means of egress, but it's also, I might look to flip this door to here so it's not as visible, but it would give a really direct out for the commissioners.
Yeah.
You know, right down the row there, and they could shoot right out. And as long as it will still meet our needs for our egress, because really we're using this as a second exit out of here, and so we've got to make that work code-wise too. So, but that's, I like that comment from Stan, but I might think about moving that door because that'd be an easy switch to do it. It would be a door that people don't really see, but it would give you guys the sense that if somebody came at you or something, you have a place that you can go to. Because right now, you're stuck in a corner where we'd give you that out, so.
I have two questions. One is referring to square footage that Paul referred to. Is it a realistic statement to say that when you build new, and you're building up to code, that the laws are so much different now than 70 years ago when this was built, that it's just a natural increase in square footage due to sizes and everything. Is that a fair statement that you're going to gain a little bit?
From the handicap standpoint, everything has to be handicap accessible. So you build a bathroom facility for the police department or whatever it is, that's why when you go to the DPW, there's fold down showers and everything, and you know, realistically, in certain jobs, you can't do it, but everything you build, you basically have to build a handicap standards today. So all public toilets, so there's certainly large increases, not large, but I mean, it's it increases the space of things. So, and it's just the nature of the codes are today, and that's not going to change. So.
Okay. My other comment is, I know the answer to this, but I kind of want it stated publicly that, well, you've been working with the department heads, and so I want to stress that we have enough bays for the fire department and the ambulance and the police for their vehicles. Is that a proper statement?
I think we've been very...
Okay.
You know, we've definitely been very... I mean, we appreciate the input of staff, and they've been very good about communicating and meeting, and this process has been going on for many, many months. I mean, we're getting darn near on to a year now from start to finish that we've been meeting with department heads, if not longer. I'd have to look at the dates, but the bottom line is there's been a tremendous amount of staff input. We really appreciate everybody's input, and I believe that everybody's comfortable that we'll meet the needs. So.
Okay, thank you.
So is the city manager's office going to be big enough to have a bigger desk?
Why would I want a bigger desk?
More square footage.
Smaller. That's more dangerous.
Do you get the best view from that corner?
So I'd like to stay on track.
Okay.
Just for time purposes. So if there's any other comments on the plan.
Could I just ask something real quick, Tom?
Yes.
So I didn't see anything for the Harbor Master anywhere. Is that...
There's no specific
never office. Never has been. There's an office for Barb.
Well, will that position always be the same, you know, the executive assistant will always be the Harbor Master? It was what I was just thinking.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's always been a secondary position here. We do have a space that we have for the Main Street Manager in the offices on the first floor as well. And that could or could not be here at some point in the future.
It's there now, Mike?
Yes, it is.
One of the conference rooms?
No, it's his office here.
That office.
There's a spare office.
Off the museum, where it says maybe museum person?
Or...
My drawing or something, I think it said.
Well, there's a...
what's that? Yeah.
We said optional museum office is just an idea, but that's really an unassigned office is what it is. So it could be Main Street, it could be Harbor Master, it could be anything.
Staff has been looking at that as Main Street office.
Uh-huh. With our shared services with the... planning and zoning. Is there two offices for that?
Yes.
Correct, there is.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing was with MSU Extension, do they have a long-term agreement or contract that, you know, building that area for them, and or is that?
There is not a long-term agreement. We've had a long-term relationship with them. Before we got too serious with regards to these designs, we approached Charlevoix County, who's the actual lessor of the space. I've talked to Kevin Shepherd with regards to it. Obviously, we haven't talked to him with regards to any changes in rent and things like that. But he basically gave us the permission to work with MSU staff. They're not showing us any intent of moving out. One of our thoughts with regards, or one of my thoughts with regards to that is, that's also a available space for us at some point in the future. We can build that space, we can have a tenant in there in MSU Extension who's paying us at least something to maintain and operate that space. And if we ever need it, obviously our uses come first. We're also showing those two offices on the, our conference room, or those two spaces on the upper level. Right. One of them's programmed currently as a weight room and the other one is a conference room. Those could possibly be changed at some point in the future if we needed to.
So this whole wing essentially is what Mike's referring to as being potential flexible space in the future.
And it seems to me that the weight room, wasn't that two separate rooms at one point?
We had, at one time, we actually had put an office here thinking that Main Street might be an office, an independent office up there, which is what we talked about. Then we ended up just making it one room.
So there's some places that we could grow into if we needed to. And again, I see MSU Extension, it's been a natural fit. I think it's worked out very well for us to have it there. If we can maintain them here, fine. If not, they're paying to help offset us to build for now and also give us flexibility in the future if we need it.
The other thing, Ray, have you like done a utility assessment of what, can you do something like that where you've got this square footage in this building and what the utilities are going to be compared to what
they can do? What's called an energy model, and we're always building to what I'm going to call a LEED. Like the LEED program is something that people might be familiar with. And we're always maximizing our insulation, maximizing our, I mentioned like the LED lighting. So although we're not pursuing LEED specifically on this project because of the cost to it, that hasn't, we've never really picked up a priority.
To get the award.
To get the actual plaque, because to get the actual plaque costs upwards of $20,000 to run all the reports and paperwork and the things that you have to do to get that. So we've had a lot of projects where we build it to the standard. So we're doing, like even at the DPW, we have dual flush toilets at the DPW and metered faucets. And there's a lot of things that we'll always incorporate to every project we do. Our expectation is that we'll do the same thing here, but we can have energy models done. But everything that we've been doing is always in the vein of energy efficiency, is in the back of our mind. So we're not putting, you know, that's why, like, when the question came up about running the snow melt, for example, and I would never do electric snow melt. It's kind of unfortunate to hear that that's what they have there. So, you know, we're
they're a bank.
Yeah.
What did they know I've got?
But even the utility, when we work with the utility, they don't do it. But the bottom line is, you know, every decision that we make, we try to factor that in. And so, but if so desired, we can request some energy modeling be done, and it'll give you a ballpark idea of what the utility costs will be. But compared to like the poor insulation and the poor lighting and things that you have here, I'm not saying it's going to be the same as a bigger building, but it certainly is going to not even be comparable to what the efficiency of this particular building is. So.
And just as a reminder, I don't know if you were in for, or aware of those discussions with regard to the DPW building. We had a couple different options that we were looking at as to what energy efficiency levels we went to, and we went to the far more.
We just went to the
higher standard.
The higher standard at the DPW. Mm-hmm. We did have exactly had the ability to make it a less efficient building in that way.
A lot of it's stuff you won't see, but it'll take for itself a long time.
The only caveat that I will say is that the fire apparatus bays, we are not holding to that highest standard because the desire was to have glass, those glass doors, that also brings to opening the view to the lake. So, you know, all the bay doors on the fire department are going to be glass doors. They're going to be insulated glass, but insulated glass is still glass. So the bottom line is we broke our approach to that is going to be what we're doing is for two things, and then I'll segue into the next thing. But the desire was to have all these doors be glass. These doors are 14 foot by 14 foot glass. They're garage doors. They're insulated glass, but they're just not great. So what we've done is we're breaking the building right here into two structures. So by virtue of the code, they're actually going to consider this a separate building and this a separate building. So we're going to basically request leniency on the energy code for this piece, which is just the apparatus storage bays, which will be held, you know, they won't be held to a higher temperature, but then once you cross back over to this structure, it's going to have excellent insulation, you know, better than most buildings in town, I would guess, so.
Just one or two. So with the museum, I mean, is it going to change how the museum's being run now, or is it still just going to be open and not staffed or curator or anything like that? Is there going to be any investment into that?
There isn't anything budgeted at this point.
Okay. And then just the other thing, I mean, I really appreciate the work that you've done, Ray, and it's just beautiful, but, you know, is it too nice I mean, do we have to be careful about how the community reacts to something like this, being a low to moderate income community and that type of thing? I mean, is there just something we should, I'm having a hard time getting my hands around that. Are there just things that we should be really careful that we're not sending a message to people that we're being extravagant or anything like that?
No, I think that's a great point. I don't feel, again, we're gonna have a few nice areas at the lobby, but when you go to those back of house areas, it's gonna be pretty, I don't wanna say bare bones, but it's gonna be rubber base and carpet and drywall and 2x2 acoustical ceiling. So we try to pick our battles and do a few areas of nice things being the public areas in the case of this building, mm-hmm. but then the rest of the building is very efficient. You know, one comment that we heard that has stuck in my head is it was actually a local builder who said, don't pull the thing of showing us a building and then we vote for it and then you peel it back to zero. I just, that I've always remembered that comment to you as far as before the vote took place, and that somebody said, don't show us a bunch of brick detailing and all that sort of thing. So we've tried to balance, you know, that, and you know, so we've got single white split face masonry, which is what you see up at the DPW, but we've mixed some brick in there. So again, there's like a, you see this big brick panel, but the building is really a split face masonry building. Mm-hmm. There was a lot more brick in earlier versions of this, but then we ended up going to a cement board shingle look, which actually we thought was more appropriate looking for the community, being a little bit more cottagey type and similar to some of the stuff that's being built over by Cafe Sante in that area. Mm-hmm. So it's going to fit the community better, and I think it's going to balance the budget. So again, we have been in the business of rescuing over budget projects, and we don't like doing that. I mean, so on our own projects, we try to be really conscious. And when you look at the estimate that we did, it's very comprehensive across the board, and it's not, you know, it's an estimate. So we do our best, and we may miss a few things low, and we may hit a few things high, and the hope is that it's going to balance itself out. But I would be shocked if this building comes in, you know, 25% over budget or 50% over budget or something. We feel pretty good that we've been managing those cost controls, and we want it to look as nice as possible and be where the budget is. And so that's kind of what we always try to do. And it's, you know, if we can get it on budget and have people be really proud and have it look perhaps like more of a quality building than it really is. And I don't mean that in that way, because it's important that things are done in a quality way, especially when it comes to insulation, mechanical systems, and everything else. But like, you know, we're using asphalt shingles on the roof, not metal roof. And there's, you know, that there's things that we could do to go extravagant that would raise the cost substantially. So I mean, I appreciate where you're coming from, and we try to balance that for sure. So.
And if I may follow up on that, I think our city has had standards by the new high school and the new library, and they're very proud of both, and they both are very elegant, but maybe, mm-hmm. and when people come into that high school, they're impressed. But on the other hand, I think it was very similar, that there's some very Spartan design to it also that made it so that people voted for it.
Well, the library, though, was a gift from the Peabody True. Foundation. There wasn't any local money, so they, you know, they designed what they wanted to provide the community. So you can't compare that.
And the bottom line is, I mean, segue, unless you have additional items, you know, I'm not going to go in depth in the budget because it's three pages and it's very detailed. But the bottom line is, where we started off with the budget, where we are right on track with where we were from the bond issue to what this current design, you know, shows. So we've gone through and we've looked specifically at masonry and the windows, and you know, we've talked to different suppliers and got real numbers to be plugged, not like big numbers, but realistic numbers to be plugging in. So again, we're really happy that we are right on track with where the budget was. That's consistent with what the bond issue language and funding was. So that's just something, again, if there's any specific questions when people have a chance to look at that, you know, by all means let us know. But that's we feel like we're on track, we're not over budget at this point, and we would like to keep it that way. So
I guess I would just in response to these comments, I think there's always going to be a number of people that are always going to say everything is too extravagant, but on the other hand, I think there's going to be a large segment of the population that's going to look at that building and take pride in seeing a respectable, presentable city hall for the city of Boyne City. I think it will say a lot for the city, and I certainly am going to take a little pride in the help I did as far as passing the budget to build this. So I think there's two sides to that.
Okay. Move on.
Yes. Okay. So We've pretty much hit everything. There was some discussion earlier on in the DPW project. We had the same discussion in how do we involve local contractors. So the way that these projects are bid, it's the general contractors go out and solicit bids from a pool of subcontractors from the area. We like to have them from the area as close to the project as possible, and that may be north, south. We typically are not seeing a lot of people from Grand Rapids because of the, or Detroit even for that matter. Sometimes we'll get some Saginaw type geographically coming in. So what we're proposing to do for this project, which we think is the best way to do this, because what happens is in a building this big, the scale of the building is out of the league of most people, quite frankly. So electricians, mechanical people, and we're talking Boyne City proper. There's probably not a concrete man in a company in Boyne City that can handle a concrete package that is going to be upwards of $200,000 to $300,000 in concrete. The masonry package is going to be $500,000 in masonry. So this is not, you know, small person in a truck type of thing. But what I'd like to do is establish, and whether we can advertise in the paper, advertising online, but create a list of interested local bidders, essentially. And if we have that list of bidders by the middle of January, when this project's going to go off the bid, what I would do is we have a mandatory walkthrough where we have contractors come and have a meeting and go over the particulars of the project, in particular get to see the site and look at things. But at that time, we could present that list of contractors as part of the contract document, so we don't have the situation of XYZ contracting saying, I would have liked to have been able to bid on putting the toilet accessories and grab bar, whatever it might be. The contractors appreciate this. We go through this on a lot of different jobs, and I think that it's going to be a different way. We've never done it this way before, but I think it's going to be the best way that we could possibly put these names of your local people out in front of the people who are actually going to bid the project. Because when we have our mandatory pre-bid meeting, the general contractors who have to be of a certain caliber to be able to bond this project, for which they're going to have to do, there's not many people even in Traverse City that are going to be able to bond a $5 million plus project. So we're probably going to see, there's nobody that will come out of Petoskey in Charlevoix area. There's going to be two or three people out of Traverse City, potentially a Grand Rapids or two, maybe. There may be somebody out of the Saginaw area, and then DeVere out of Alpena side will probably be here. And we know, I believe that Ed Hunt and Integrity Construction can bond the project, but they'll have to bond $5 million project. So that's the bottom line. So if we end up with 3 to 5 general contractors is what I'm expecting we're going to have there, and then as part of our bid documents, we give them a list of people that they can reach out to and basically give those guys the opportunity to bid the projects, because I don't think that there's anybody that's going to be able to pick up a big component of this, because all these components are hundreds of thousands of dollars. The other thing that we did by breaking the building into two pieces, and this was also a cost thing, is that by making this a little bit smaller area, which is not that small, but it's small enough that it'll fall into the category of what's called 5B construction. So we're essentially building a concrete block with metal joists and a concrete floor, and then that the structure that you see from that roof line up is essentially a big house. So there is carpentry work, there is wood trusses, there is wood walls. The interior partitions can be wood. We're figuring that there's about a 10% savings on all the framing from going to metal stud to wood. We're all sprinkled in the building, so we have that covered. We're gonna give the contractors the option, if they wanna build with metal stud at no cost to us, they'll be able to build with metal stud. But what opportunity that'll give is that there'll be some carpentry work on this job. There's a lot of finished carpentry as far as, you know, trim work and everything else that'll take place. So I think that by breaking it down that way, by using that wood construction, and by creating a list of interested bidders, because we all know people, you know, people may talk to people. I think that to get the word out and say, there's going to be a list at City Hall, and we'd like you to put your name on that list, and then we'll put it right in front of these guys and say, okay, because when we were doing the DPW, they didn't know or they weren't contacted by anybody during the bidding process. So everybody's saying, well, why didn't we have, you know, somebody from Boyne City do this or that? And there wasn't anybody that was reaching out to these contractors because these guys are tied up on, you know, houses and other things. But if they know, or if you know of people who are interested, I think that's going to be our most effective way to do this, and it'll really, it'll put the names and numbers right in front of these bidders and say, okay, you know, and what we should do is create a form that says, what would you be interested in bidding? And if it says trim carpentry or whatever, then maybe these folks can be able to pull a trim carpenter and get them on the crew and give them some of the work. And I think that's going to be our best bet for how to approach this, you know, local contractor discussion. And again, we've never done it. I'm excited about that option because it's easy for us to do, and quite frankly, it's easy for the contractors to do. If they list what they want to do and to what level they feel comfortable doing it, at least they can have conversations up with these bidding contractors. So,
what do you recommend qualifies as local? Is it Boyne City? Is it Charlevoix County? Is it Emmett, Charlevoix, Antrim County?
Well, that's our decision.
I know, but what do you recommend, Ray?
I honestly, to me, locals, points, I don't consider Charlevoix part of Boyne City myself. I'm no more than I consider Traverse City part of Boyne City. Or, I mean, I think that, but you guys have a better feel for that, so I don't know. But I wouldn't consider if you're going to reach out to Petoskey or Charlevoix, I don't see why Traverse City is not considered local too. So I got to talk to you about, see if we can get ski pass for the good grades. Why they cut off Grand Traverse County. but anyways, it's just, I think the joke, the reality of it is that to me, we work in northern Michigan, and we work from just south of Traverse up to the bridge and out east towards the middle. And that's kind of like the area that we tend to do most of our work. We're not trying to push into Grand Rapids because, you know, to have contractors coming out. So as long as somebody's within a reasonable drive, so that if there's a roof leak or something, we always kind of discourage, and that's why we do the mandatory walkthroughs, and we can say what contractors we want to be mandatory, because we don't want it. We get, when we bid this job, we'll get calls every day from these builders exchanges out of Grand Rapids and Detroit and everything else, and they're advertising these projects to their builders, but quite frankly, that makes us nervous when we have a roofer who comes out of, you know, Toledo or something, and you have a roof leak. You want somebody that's going to come within an hour to be able to look at a roof leak or take care of that. So we really are proponents of local. What is local? This, the people who voted on this project were not from Charlevoix, Traverse City, or Petoskey. They're from Boyne City. So to me, that's what I would consider local. But it's, as Mike said, it's really your decision.
And you could solve that ski pass thing by moving to Boyne City. That'd be great.
Or even Boyne Falls.
Well, the voters were from Boyne City, but we have local contractors that live in the townships. So that's, it gets hard to define.
Well, outside the city limits, but they're still local.
Yeah. But I think that if we just got the word out that if you consider yourself a local contractor, or you would like to try to be considered for a piece of this project, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to put a list of contractors together that we're going to give to the bidders, and it's not saying you're going to get the job. You know, the other way that municipalities have done it is that they'll say they'll pay a premium up to 10% or whatever that number is if you are using local contractors. And, you know, again, I don't think that, you know, like MDC as a big site work contractor did the DPW, and they're fairly, you know, regional. Again, they're out of Charlevoix, so that's about as, you know, close to these other areas that we're going to get. But I guess I just don't personally consider Gaylord or Charlevoix any more local than Traverse City. We're all northern northwest Michigan. So
a lot of people that work for MDC and Reef Rally live here in Boyne City too.
In
the township surrounding Boyne City.
And so if you wanted to, you know, say that you would pay a premium or put something in the language, that can be done too. I mean, that has been done where people will say, I've seen commissions say that they'll do a premium for a local contract, you know, to use local. But the reality of it is that I want to impress upon people is that this is a big job. There's a lot of scale and quantity, which works to your benefit in pricing because we get economies of scale, but it also is to a detriment for small contractors that they don't have the, you know, again, the ability. Most people will not be able to bid this project as a general contractor. There's even people in Traverse City that can't bid it because they cannot bond $5 million. So there's a company called Birdco who actually does a lot of medical facilities and work in Petoskey, Charlevoix area, and we asked them if they were going to be bidding it. They said they couldn't bond $5 million. So
let's go back. I mean, one of the things that brought this to the table is we got a letter from a city resident saying that we should consider having some type of a local bidding premium that we provide for contractors. That's something that has come before the city, previous city commissions in the past. The city commission has rejected that and said, you know, in fairness to both bidders and taxpayers, or not just bidders, that they weren't going to set any type of a premium for local folks that they could, you know, have something. What we have done is worded our bids that, you know, we accept the bids that we think are in the best interest of the city on a case-by-case basis. There isn't any formula that we're locked into. So when Lasco, or excuse me, when Bob Mathers comes in with a bid on a police vehicle, which is basically the same as the state bid, you know, maybe within a couple bucks, 100, one way or the other, we take that bid. Generally, that's what the commission has done, and we've done that on a case-by-case basis. But it doesn't give Bob the ability to just say, you know, I know what the state bid is, and that's the best price the city can get, so I'm going to bid it 10% more than that. If everybody did that for this, if we accept that type of a priority and everybody accepted it, you know, that's an extra, you know, if we're a $7 million project or $5 million project, that's an extra $500,000 or $700,000. I think the formula that this commission has used, as long as I've been here and before that, to consider what's the best in the community on a case-by-case basis, has worked well for us this up to this point. And we've done millions of dollars of projects. We built a new wastewater, $8 million wastewater treatment plant that way. We just built a $2 million DPW facility. All our streetscape projects and infrastructure projects. And we've done that well. And I, you know, there's times where I hear from, you know, a local lumber company or something like that, that they wish that, you know, people had contacted them for supplies. But I think that's where Ray's suggestion is, if we have somebody that wants to be on the supplier list or a contractor list, you know, and we give that some consideration. So my recommendation would be, I think Ray's suggestion is a fairly elegant one. You know, if you want to say Charlevoix County or something within a 20-mile radius of Boyne City or something of that nature, that their headquarters is in 20-mile radius of Boyne City, or 30, or whatever number you want to pick at, kind of like we do with the farmer's market, you might set something up that, you know, it's always great, there's always going to be somebody on one side or the other of the line, but ultimately if you're going to set something up that says we want to include, we'll give you the opportunity to be included on a listing or something of that nature, the local bidding, you're going to have to draw a line someplace.
And usually there's a cost benefit for somebody that is, you know, right here. I know that they use some folks out of East Jordan to help do some framing on the cold storage building and so forth. So if there's a benefit, I mean, it should show in the numbers too. And we do ask them to list the contractors. We can ask them to list whatever number of contractors we want. We always list the main ones, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, fire suppression, you know, masonry, different things. So we can get an idea of who people are listing. A lot of times they're all listing the low bidder unless they're uncomfortable with who the low bidder is, and then they'll have different people. I mean, they're not gonna, there's too much at stake for people to take, and that's the only thing that'll be difficult, I will say too, is that, you know, Joe Smith may be a local carpenter that's everybody knows and is renowned, but, you know, these guys gotta know that Joe Smith is gonna show up and get the job done when the job needs to be done, and that's the only thing that there has to be a comfort level that takes place, but there's nothing to say that if these names are out there and somebody finds a guy who can do all the trim work in the, you know, commission chambers for cheaper than anybody, that you might put that number in there and use them. I think that's where I think we're going to see the best, like, true local participation is in the carpentry work in this project. So,
and I've talked to local contractors and suppliers that, you know, I've been encouraging them to bid on, you know, like the Dilworth project or the CAT project. And to be candid with you, I think the problem that they're going to have is this project's going to be too big for them. They're not going to be able to get, they don't have the financial resources to get the bonding because the banks aren't allowing them to do it.
to be able to bid on a project of this size. It's going to be too big for them because they can't bid on those smaller projects. So I want to give them all the opportunities that we can to do that. And I think we should be able to try and consider it on a case-by-case basis if we think there's somebody that should be included. But I don't didn't recommend in the past, and I wouldn't recommend that we set in that for this one project, that we've changed the processes that we've done for well over a decade and set up some type of local premium. I don't know why we'd change it.
Well, I like Dave's suggestion rather than the local premium.
So if we were going to go that approach, I think what we just need to do is work it out so we can get something on a website to have a form at the front desk, and then as people are talking, maybe put an ad and wherever we can get the word out to truly local people, which I know there's a lot of different things that happen in this community, and especially coming into the holidays and everything else, I think there would be some good opportunities. So,
and if that's the direction the commission would want us to go, one, if you want to set a parameter or a radius around the city or however you want to tell us what we're considering local, and two, we'd have to work with Ray to kind of get a listing from him or somehow figure out how we tell people what trades are going to be looked for.
Well, that's all. I mean, when these things are advertised and everything else, that's all in there. So I don't think we need to,
we're wanting them to get on that list before it's advertised.
I don't think we should reach out to Charlevoix, because you're already going to get the Charlevoix people bidding the project, as far as the MDCs and the Haggards and the plumbing and heating. I mean, you're going to get big people who are going to do that work already. I mean, if you want to get a local carpenter, I think you'd want to get a Boyne City carpenter, or within a week. How far is it to Charlevoix from here?
22 miles.
Yeah, I mean, I just think my recommendation would be to try to keep it in that 15 to 20 mile range.
But like you said, Haggards, but like Ballard's out of Tosney.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to bid it. They can bid it. They will bid it. And on the DPW building, the mechanical contractor is out of Petoskey. Donovic is the mechanical contractor. He's out of Petoskey. So these guys, trust me, he got it because he bid it aggressively, and it's close enough to him. So you'll see some of those folks bidding that project. This project again, mechanically and electrically. There's a couple. The electrical companies seem this. Mid-sized ones, but you might get a mid-sized one that there used to be, a company in Point or East Jordan, and I can't think of their name. They spun off of somebody else, but they've done quite a bit of commercial work. You might get people like that will bid a project, and those guys will know this product's out there. Trust me, that's advertised. It's in the bid rooms. Mm-hmm. People are talking on the street. It's like there's a lot of excitement building because it's a good time to bid right now, because there was this a lot of work like a year ago, and everybody was down, and then everybody got up again, and then now it's kind of evening out a little bit, and we're gonna, I think, knock on wood, hit this right at the prime time for it's a big enough project that people are very interested. Like I say, when you have hundreds of thousands of dollars of concrete, hundreds of thousands of dollars of masonry, hundreds of thousands of dollars of site work. I mean, all these packages are meaty packages. The project's going to be, a 12-month project, so it's going to be, it's a project that people are looking for. So.
What are you thinking?
I think 15 or 20 miles is too narrow. I mean, we always try to talk being a little bit more regional and the communities working together and all those sorts of things. 50% of people travel from one county to another county for work. I think we should extend it a little bit more than
what?
40.
Give me a number.
I'd say to include Traverse City. Is that 50 miles?
Yeah, all we're doing, we don't need to invite, we're not trying to get, again, we're going to get the contractors that can do this job regionally. We are. Whether it be guys out of Gaylord, whatever, we're going to get bidders from Alpena.
So you're just thinking about local
carpenters. We're just talking about the small time. That's what my impression was. When people are saying, we want local contractors to bid this project.
They're not thinking Trevor City.
Yeah. I mean, they're not really. I don't want the small carpenter to be on this list from Traverse City. I want the small carpenter who's out in the valley somewhere that might be able to do something productive on this project. That's who I personally think we're trying to get. We're not trying to help MDC. Yeah. MDC is going to bid this project. I guarantee you they're going to have numbers to the generals. That's, we don't, and they're advertising, we don't have to, we're going to advertise, we always advertise the project in the paper. So what I would say for that is, we can start advertising in December if you guys want. You can put it in the Petoskey and Charlevoix and Gaylord or wherever you want. And that's a way to get people to know that this project's going to bid. Then they have to be resourceful enough to figure out what they need to do. Because quite frankly, Hugh, we don't want somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. We don't want a residential builder trying to do a project like this. It's just not.
I think we need enough. They're going to bid.
Yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, if we're trying to help somebody, my impression from this discussion was that we're trying to help the local, small-time person that maybe needs work, right? I mean, again, I was never looking at a, we're not looking for general contractors, we're looking for subcontractors, and we want to be fair to the small guy. That's all we're trying to do.
Jim?
I think it would be a really good will gesture to do what you're talking about, is to just say, Boyne City, maybe Boyne City, Boyne Falls, contractors, we want to know if you're interested in doing this. We're going to give this list to the contractors, and I think that would create some very good,
you're
very
saying
strong goodwill.
Don't put a radius, don't put a mile, don't put a
like
just say Boyne City.
Anybody big enough is going to be into it anyway, but even the small guys in Boyne City, if you want somebody who can do finished carpentry, you know, we're assembling a list to tell us what you can do, and we're going to give that to the general contractor. I think that would be a really nice.
Is that what you're saying?
That's what effort. Saying. You know, yeah. It's outreach. You're responding to the complaint you got. It's all you can do. And it's really the best you can do.
And you're not guaranteeing anybody work. You're just guaranteeing that their name will be known. Or, you know, and they can come to the pre-bid meeting, and what we do is at the pre-bid meeting, we then compile a list of bidders that can then be left and it can be handed out to anybody that can then go, you know, we can leave that bidders list at the front desk door, and somebody can walk in and say, okay, the five general contractors are X, Y, and Z, and they can make the initiative to call those guys up and say, hey, I'm Joe Smith and I live over here and I'm great at doing trim and whatever. I mean, by doing this wood frame kind of construction thing, we're opening a door a little bit. But, you know, you also need a pretty heavy piece of equipment to put, you know, trim up 50 feet in the air on a tower. So, again, there's limitations to what we're, you know. But inside the lobby, that's a great area that, you know, we've got some very simple paneling. It's plywood and it's got some wide boards, and it's going to be a simple thing that can be done by a fairly small crew of guys. I mean, somebody could bring in for these contractors, there might be an incentive to say, hey, if you want to bid out this and this to me, you know, that's what I'm shooting for, is to bring those guys in, and then they'll take pride in everything else. And again, they did do some of that on the DPW, as far as I know, that cold storage, they brought some local guys to help out with framing the roof on the cold storage building and stuff like that. So it was to their benefit to have them join their crew. They're still responsible. That's ultimately the key thing, is that the general contractor is the person who is ultimately responsible. So if they hire somebody, they gotta feel comfortable that A, they're gonna show up and they're gonna do the right work. Because when we write our punch list stuff, it's going to the general contractor, it's not going to the side guy.
Well, if we just left it local, and just said local, then those local contractors who consider themselves local to Boyne City should be the ones that would appeal to them, and whether they live in Boyne City proper or between here and Boyne Falls or between here and East Jordan, that wouldn't that be just sort of...
Do you want to use the verbiage local, or do you want to use Boyne City?
I think you could leave it ambiguously local, and wherever it's going to go out to is going to be local.
Local Boyne City County.
Because whoever you're trying to reach out to is not going to get the message if they're in Sheboygan, probably.
Right.
I mean, really. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if somebody gets their hands, or somebody's talking to somebody, they're going to be in that network queue that you're talking about. You know, it's like if you have a friend in Gaylord that you say, hey, there's this project and they're, you know.
Well, we could start with something. We'll start with something with, say, local Boyne City contractors.
That's
Boyne City area or something like that. We'll put something together.
And if it comes into, it's a problem, we can always bring it back to the commission and say, hey, we're getting somebody from Nova Scotia that's considering this.
Right, that would be, yeah.
Can we X that person out or something like that? So if that's okay, we'll draft something up.
Okay.
Based on the consensus, we won't have a firm number that we're working off of.
Like a firm parameter, like 10 miles out.
But if we see a problem that it's getting out of control, we can bring it back and nail it down.
Do you recall where we did the advertisement for bids for the DPW, either of you, Barb or?
Where we did it?
I mean, I think we put it in the Petoskey paper.
I think we put it in the News Review, and then we did it in the local paper in the Boyne Gazette.
Yeah.
And then it went, of course, to all the trades, I believe, or a couple of the trades, didn't it?
Well, it went to the Builders Exchange.
There you go, so then it's out there.
The Builders Exchange already knows about it, so, yeah, but they do, I mean.
Oh, I know they do.
So it's, so, I mean, if we advertise again in the Boyne paper, the Petoskey paper, you don't even have to advertise in Traverse City, because if those folks all know about it through the Builders Exchange and through the contractors that would be bidding. Everybody, what I call regionally, is aware of this project. Whenever I run into people, it's like, you know, when are the drawings gonna be on the street?
So, and if they're not aware, we probably don't want them.
Right, so.
Yeah. But I think you have consensus from us to follow that direction. Yes, Mike?
If I could kind of touch on a related matter that I talked to Ray before. We've been approached by a firm that wanted me to raise the issue about whether we want to stay with the same type of a bidding contractor relationship that we did on the DPW and all of our other projects, or whether we had any interest in exploring a construction manager form of arrangement. And Ray knows a lot more about that than I do. We just went through this process. There, you know, some people think that there's pros and cons. I've talked to various people, and I'm not seeing enough to say that I'm seeing any really strong advantages to going to a construction manager form. I like being able to hold a contractor responsible for the project. We've just gone through that process with the DPW, and I think, you know, we're pretty much on time, maybe a week or so off, but on budget and things of that nature, and we know who to hold responsible. I don't know, Tom, if you've worked with any type of construction with that type, but it was an issue that was brought up to me. I talked to Ray about it, and I just wanted to approach it to the commission that some people wanted to talk about a construction manager.
I've never done anything commercial like that, just residential, but Ron and I went to the seminar at MML, and we discussed that at length, and I took notes, and I left them at home, but
okay.
But I would go with Ray's recommendation. I would personally.
I mean, it's not
like a $30 million project, and that's, I don't think it's, you know, it's a big project, but it's not huge. Where you need that construction management firm, it still falls under one company. Is that a fair assumption?
It is. I mean, the difference between, so the argument with construction management is, if it's true construction management, you bid all these bid packages out, so then you get a masonry bid package, and a concrete bid package, and a painting bid package, and a framing bid package, and an electrical bid package, a mechanical bid package, and a plumbing, and a fire suppression. And what I learned from the partners that started my firm was, I have this many bid packages, and I have that many holes for stuff to fall through. So if the construction manager doesn't write the scopes of work, and this guy says, well, I thought you had it in your package, and you thought you had it in your package. Well, who pays for it? You pay for it. In a general contractor scheme, this is our 50% set of drawings, which is actually a little bit more than 50%, but this is 50% set of drawings. If there's a problem, and Mike's a general contractor, it's your problem, and we're going to work it out, and you're going to go back to your contractor. So that's ultimately the sort of the basic premise. But the other thing with that, if it's true construction management, the benefit is that you can get bids from five electricians and five plumbers and five masons and pick who you want, but then you have to hold contracts with all those people. So instead of having one contract, you're going to have 10 contracts. So it makes it a lot more complicated. And if the benefit is that we can pick what quality contractor, again, these contractors aren't going to pick random people. I mean, they're not going to take some mason that they've never worked with to do a $500,000 masonry package, or, you know, the mechanical package. I put some of the basic numbers. You know, the mechanical, the electrical package is $600,000 is what we're estimating the electrical package. The mechanical package is $750,000. The plumbing package is $200,000. They're not going to pick some fly-by-night or somebody that they don't trust to do the job either on time or quality or everything else. So, and then the other way they do it is what's called constructor or construction manager as constructor, which means the construction manager holds all the contracts. But it's, to me, we've done projects like that, and I'm just not a big fan personally of construction management in that regard, because then you're basically, you have your general contract, your construction manager is really a general contractor. And what we've run into, and people who work with me and know me, like on this project, is I'm working for you guys. I'm not working for the subcontractors. And I've had construction people tell me on projects that I've got to look out for my guy in the field, and I've got to look. And I said, but you're a part of the owner team if you're a construction manager. So we don't get invited to do a lot of construction management projects because people know where we stand on how we work. And you know, we will fight for the owner, and that's just how we approach projects. And that's not, if you're working for the contractors, the subcontractors, and you're working for the owner, there's a conflicting interest there. I have no conflicting interest. And I can say, when we said to do something on the job and you didn't do it, and we want a credit for it, or we want you to do it, I can say that, and I'm not hiding anything or trying to, so I just, and there's no right or wrong. There's going to be other opinions. I don't think the people who do construction management are bad or whatever else. I think it's the right approach for certain projects. I don't, as you're saying, I don't think it's necessary for this project. I think we'll get as good of a product as we would without it, and I think it'll make it a lot less complicated, and we're going to have one person or one company ultimately that's responsible for everybody. So, and the only other way that we've done it successfully, if we really want to have that pick and choose thing, is we have bid projects where we said we want to bid the electrical, mechanical, plumbing, or whatever other trades we want out separately, and then we ask the contractor to assign a percentage to what they're going to assume that contractor. So we bid the project, we have five bid packages come in, and then the successful general contractor says, I'm going to charge 3% on top of whatever that number is to assume those contracts. That's kind of like a hybrid way of doing it. We've done it on a few private projects, like when we did the American Waste Office over there in 131, that's how we did it. They wanted to be able to pick and choose their mechanical, electrical people directly because they work with a lot of different people. And that's how we did that one. And the contractors gave us a number and said, it's going to be 3 to 5 or 7, whatever the number was that they assumed. And then they took on that contractor. But ultimately, you're going to get the low bid within reason. I mean, so people, we're going to probably see the same electrical, mechanical, plumbing on most bids. Somebody may have somebody else because of who they relationship-wise or want to work with. But I think that it worked out well, and we've been doing it for a long time, and we continue to do it. That's our preferences for this scale, like you're saying, for $5 million, I think general contracting is still a good approach. But we can certainly do whatever anybody would like to do. So.
Your thoughts?
Well, the St. Matthews project, we didn't have a construction manager coming on that. New Parish Hall, what we did with the MEG, did the senior center, because us neophytes, we didn't know a whole lot about construction, me included, you know, as far as that.
So was that design build, or was that, because if that's the other method that you get is design
build. We had paper construction builder, but okay. We still had a project manager to advise us.
Yeah, so it'd be similar to the arrangement that we have as, you know, professional services kind of thing, so.
I don't think we need it.
Okay.
I don't think so either.
Tom, do you want to review your notes from the
MML
conference?
Yeah,
you
might want to.
No, because they explained the differences, and their conclusion was pick which one you want, depending on how big of the project, basically.
Yeah. If you're doing, I mean, this is not, it's a fairly complicated project, but it's not a hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, like hospitals, do it a lot, you know. Munson does all construction management, but they also have their own staff of construction managers that they're using, so again.
I mean, I'm very comfortable with, I mean, the knowledge, and it's kind of been a dry run, doing the DPW project has been a dry run for going through this.
Okay.
And, you know, we've seen, I'm very comfortable working with Ray and having him represent us and make sure he's got our interests at heart. I think he's working out very well for us up to this point, and I don't see that changing in the future, so I'd go with his recommendation.
Yeah. All in agreement?
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for your confidence and everything else. It's been good so far. So so the last thing, so the budget again, I reviewed and we talked about the alternates, so we have that out there. The schedule that we're looking at, it was a release date of drawings on the 11th of January of 2016, and then we will have a mandatory pre-bid meeting here on the 13th, which would be Wednesday, and then the bid would be due Monday the 25th, so it's just a little over a bid period. I'm going to get to that last. So, I skipped over the schedule. So, but that's what the time frame is going to be for the project. The only thing I wasn't sure about is, you know, we'll have the bid opening here, and I'm sure a few commissioners will attend and everything else. And but then, as far as awarding the bids and everything else, if that fits in good with our commission meetings and what might be going on in January or the beginning of February, if there's a better date to have it due so that maybe the commissioners have time to put it in their bid package, and that's the only thing I might change. But we didn't want to bid it the first week coming out of the holidays. We were going to bid it between Christmas and New Year's. We decided, based on everybody's schedule and what we've got from consultants and things to coordinate, that we just needed the extra time to do the best job we could. It wasn't going to make a difference construction start wise, so we didn't want to start it the first, or we didn't want to put it out the day after, you know, New Year's, basically, which is the 4th of January, I think. So what we looked at is the 11th is our first date. So I guess it would just matter if we wanted to slide it to fit better with a commission meeting. That would be my only.
Yeah, the commission meetings are scheduled in January on the 12th and the 26th. So if you have them coming in on the 25th,
yep.
I'm assuming you're going to need more time than just overnight or something like that to have a recommendation ready on the 26th, which should be a noon meeting.
Should be.
So maybe we bump it back just another week so that we have like a week. But when's the next meeting after the 26th?
February 9th.
I mean, I'd rather have it where we could have the bids prior to that then.
Yeah.
Again, from a construction standpoint, it won't slow things down, but that way at least we can get the information out, vet the bids,
yeah,
put together the bid tabs, all that kind of stuff. So maybe what we'll do is we'll bump it back one more week and have the bids due that February 1st or whatever time frame that is.
That's Monday the 1st, yeah.
And I'm going to have to look because I'm actually going to be out of town the 29th, the 31st through the 5th, so I don't want to have it due when I'm gone, but I'll look at my schedule and try to work it out so that it'll be in that time frame. It'll give us more time, but we'll plan on...
So we're trying. So our goal is to bring it to the City Commission at the February 9th meeting.
Correct. Okay. Yep.
So like you said, it's not going to make a difference on the starting date.
Yes.
Because the starting date that we're looking at is?
When the weather breaks, and so it'll be March, April.
I mean,
but there's things that, you know, again, you guys have some ducks in a row that you're going to have to start thinking about pretty seriously about vacating this building. You know, they can be potentially doing demo in March. We're going to leave it up to the contractor, but realistically, frost laws and everything else, we don't know what the winter is going to hold, but I would presume that things will be mobilizing. The good thing is that we'll get shop drawings going with a February award. They will get long lead shop drawing type items, which I can't think of anything offhand that's going to be, you know, tremendous. It's not like we have anything that's a 6 month lead time. A lot of things are going to be the 3 month lead time by the time they clear the site, get the foundations in, you know, the block can be made and things like that. So we'll see shop drawings and that sort of thing coming in February and March, but actual construction will probably be late March, early April is what I would think is. But there's, again, a possibility that they bring this building down sooner.
I guess I have a question, and I'm not sure how this all works, but by having this advertised for bids to come in, Is that time enough for a lot of these major companies?
Yes.
Because don't they have other maybe projects they might be bidding on as well?
I get this a lot, basically. Okay. So we have, this was a bad week, so we have a small project for another thing going on that the bids are due on Monday. Mm-hmm. We hadn't heard anything from anybody. Now, granted, it is deer season, so there's a lot of guys that were gone. Okay. We started getting a lot of questions today. On the DPW, mm-hmm. they didn't start asking questions till 4 days before bids were due. So you can give them,
I want 3 weeks.
We want 3 weeks, we gotta give them three. If we gave them 3 weeks, yeah. they wouldn't even open the drawings up the first week, and then they'd start to look at it the second week, and they really get into it. That's how it is, it really is.
All right, I'm just kind of stunned because, you know, you would think maybe next spring there's a lot of major projects around the area, you know, in Northwest Michigan that they're bidding at, you know.
That's the good thing for us, is that there's, we're gonna be one of the big prizes, I guess, for lack of better words.
Yeah, okay, all right.
But we're doing a little bit, and what I'm thinking, Laura, is that we'll probably end up we may extend the bid time or push it. We'll push it around so that the bids work out and we get them prior to the meeting. Mm-hmm. When would you send the the commission packets out? I mean, this is obviously going to be big enough that there'll be special emails and whatever going out for this project.
They go out Friday the 5th.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. February. In line, we're talking.
But you opened the bids for DPW at a special meeting. You didn't.
No, we just did a bid opening here.
Right.
It wasn't.
They're not open at a meeting.
Yeah.
That's my point. So you open them, but then you actually award them at a meeting?
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we just publicly read the bids.
Yeah.
Okay, because I went to that, yeah.
Yeah, we just publicly read the bids, which we'll do the exact same thing, just like we did there.
Yeah, we do that for, almost all the bids we do. Okay. We'll have a reading somewhere, generally here at City Hall. They're generally open to the public.
So when that contractor's there and he hears it, his low bid, he's not guaranteed that he got it.
Oh, heavens no.
Until that.
Nothing's guaranteed until the commission, the commission can reject all the bids if it wanted to.
Got it. Okay.
Just because we go out for bid doesn't guarantee anybody anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a chance to bid.
I had a pretty horrific experience with that where the low red contractor on a $2.8 million project didn't use one of the people that was at the mandatory walkthrough, and that's part of the whole point. It was an existing building, and you had to be at that walkthrough where they put a fire suppression contractor that wasn't there. And the other two contractors that bid the project listed that guy as an alternate, the person that wasn't there. Well, that one didn't. And that particular client said, they said, we'll give you the person that was there. And it was a school district, and they said, we can't. We have to play by the rules, and they weren't there, and that contractor lost that project.
Because
they didn't. So just because you're red low doesn't mean you're low. But generally speaking, if you're red low, you should get the job. But it doesn't guarantee.
Because you know the kind. Yeah.
Well, again, go back to
how
does this commission award bids? What we think is in the best interest. We don't have to award it to the low bidder.
And at that mandatory pre-bid walkthrough, we'll say that too, and we'll reiterate that, because a lot of people, like that contractor, went to the board meeting, was raising with everybody about how bad, and to this day, they're not real happy with us, and we had a really good relationship before that happened. We didn't do anything. We were just playing the rules. But the point is that we'll bring it up at the meeting and say, listen, just because you're low bid, this commission or this, city in the past doesn't necessarily have to take the low bidder.
That's
and
right.
If you're red low, does not mean you're guaranteed a job. Mm-hmm. So anyways.
Before we leave schedule, just to double check, we're looking at about 12 to 18 month project. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in that time frame. The current vision right now is that City Hall operations will be leasing space from Honeywell across the street. We still have to visit that, and Paul Andrews is out on National Hunting Holiday this week, so hopefully we'll be able to do that soon, bring that arrangement to the commission. Fire is going to stay in the existing fire hall. EMS will stay in existing EMS. Police is looking at refurbishing some of the soon-to-be vacated DPW spaces to go into that facility. We
may have to look at where Main Street goes at some point with the renovations that's going on to their, where their office is now. So we may have to find some space for them at some point. So that's kind of how we're looking to, I don't think I've forgotten anybody. That's how we're looking to divvy things up at this point.
How do you vacate this building? With your own personnel or with?
We haven't gotten that far yet. We'll learn a little. We have a few months yet, but middle of winter, yeah. Best time to move.
Yeah.
We'll watch and see exactly how the DPW process goes too. We'll learn a little bit on that as well.
Okay.
So that's kind of the vision that we have going forward with regards to that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any space we can use at the waste treatment plant?
Yeah.
Office there?
There are, but again, we're trying to keep things in logical groups and not bring things up too far.
Well, I was just thinking about Main Street.
Yeah. They'd rather be either someplace downtown or here or something like that.
How much, can I ask how much space is available at any one?
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
They have, if you go across the street on the eastern portion, on the southern portion of their building,
mm-hmm.
it's a lot of it's the area that my understanding is that the library used.
Right, okay.
They have a large area that would serve as our meeting area, front reception area. And then they also have a series of offices that they haven't used for quite some time that are available too.
And we could probably always use the library or the senior center or other things for
meeting spaces if we needed to. That's all I had on
school
that.
District.
Okay, so my last item that I had on the list was the Veterans Park Pavilion. So we've been working with Barb and the committee on that kind of, they've been raising money and we're trying to refine it and bring it in. And one of the things that I have said is that if we can bid some of that project along as an alternate basically to this project, that they could see some really fantastic economies of scale savings from the standpoint of, you know, we want to match the brick and so forth anyways between the buildings because it all should tie together. So we're still working through and trying to figure out, you know, where we're going. We're looking at reducing, using one of the plans that we had, but not the one with the big roof, but maybe one with more of a flat roof. That was part of that presentation, that packet of for the Veterans Pavilion project. And I think that the reason we wanted to put on this agenda is just to make sure if things ended up going that direction where we did try to sneak that into this project, if there was any objections or if anybody felt there was any conflict or, I don't know if you talked to bond counsel or anybody asked them. I mean, I don't know if you should or need to, you know, if it's appropriate. But the bottom line is we're not looking for the funds for this project to pay for the project.
Yes.
It would be separately funded and we could be very clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that that would just be another alternate and we would just stipulate that it has separate funding and everything else. But being that it's essentially on the same site, it'd be easy to pull that piece out of it and have like a number specific to doing the work. Because there's, you know, when you do a contract, there's permit costs, there's, you know, temporary facilities and garb and all these little things that you don't think add up to be a lot of money usually. And on a small project, it just sometimes throws that project higher. On a big project where they're throwing a little bit of trash from a small project, it's just they don't have to pay to mobilize and do all that stuff. So there's some really potential benefits to this, you know, throwing this in there as an alternate. But again, we just wanted to throw it out to the commission and say if there's any comments. So.
I kind of like the idea of bidding it out and the original concept there, which, you know, we had an estimate of about $700,000. And, you know, we came away from the DPW project. We estimated $2.7 million and it came in $2,033,000, which there was, you know, $600,000 difference there. Things. And if we use part of that funding to, you know, to finish the pavilion over here, it certainly isn't going to jeopardize our general fund as far as having a reasonable, you know, rainy day fund. So it's I like the idea of bidding it out and it's an original concept.
Well, if the commission's okay with us exploring that, the committee is working on that, and we'll come up with some recommendations. We just wanted to float the idea of, you know, if we can bid them to, if you're open to the idea of us bidding them together to see if we can get some economies of scale to make something work. The committee itself is working on recommendations with regards to what they're actually going to want to go forward with bids, and that would come back to the commission at some point. So right now there's about a $500,000 gap from what we had estimated, so.
Right, and we had a $600,000 savings on the DPW building, so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the savings on the DPW building, to be clear, we didn't use a contingency. Mm-hmm. And I don't anticipate that we're going to use all the contingency in this building either. So not that we will allocate or spend the contingency, but that's where, you know, there's a big chunk of money that we have in our budget, which we have in this particular project. The contingency that we have allocated right now is $553,000. You know, generally, it's going to be in the neighborhood of $500,000. We are going to use some of the contingency. There's always things that get missed, added, whatever has to happen. But I would be very, very shocked if we used.
Well, with regards to DPW, if there's free money in the city's general budget or budget to bring to the pavilion project, if the commission wished to do that, that's something we could do. If we come in under budget and don't use contingency for the city hall project, we cannot use any of the voter approved money for the pavilion. We've already talked to the bond council on that, and the language was specific that money has to stay for this project. So we can't use that. If there's savings there, we can't use that savings.
Right.
Laura?
That's the point I was just going to bring up, so okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I think it would have to be really clear that it's separate because this was a voted issue.
Yeah.
And if there's any misconstrued idea that we're adding this into this overall project,
no.
I think it's going
to
be really
No, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, because as Ray mentioned before, we bid them at the same time, but they'd have to be coming from separate funding pools.
Right. Right.
Well, that's where I'm confused. If we bid them at the same time, but we don't have the money for the pavilion,
then you reject the bids.
No, it's an alternate.
It's an alternate.
So just like the green roof and the paver patio,
overall.
They're going to give us a number for the green roof, and it's going to be $37,000 for the green roof.
Right.
Okay.
We come back to you guys in our bid tab and say, do you want to do the green roof or do you not want to do the green roof? And if you say we don't want to do the green roof, then we just don't add $37,000 to the base bid. So the pavilion wouldn't be base bid. The pavilion would be an ad alternate for X amount of dollars is all it's going to work. So you can...
We can separate them.
We would separate. And the thing that'd be nice about it is that we would be very clear to say what we're trying to do here. And then to the contractor, we'd tell them it will have a separate funding source and have to be probably a separate contract even.
Yeah.
But they're going to still benefit from the mason who's over here laying brick is going to be able to walk over there and lay brick as part of his package. So
not if we can't pay for it. But I understand the concept, but why would you bid it out as an alternative if you didn't have your funds secured for the pavilion?
Well, they have. That's what we're trying to figure out is how much they can do. We're not doing the big grand open roof. That's not what
we're trying to figure out what we can do with the money we have to work with.
I had the drawing. I think I still have it up a lot. So see this right here? This is what we're back to talking about, this version, which was...
We're getting too far into the weeds right now.
Right.
Because that hasn't even been decided by the committee. So
okay.
Right.
We just wanted to make sure that you're okay with us exploring that option. The funds are going to be separate, and we're going to come back with a recommendation later. I think we're getting too far into details that we haven't decided yet.
Right.
Or come up with a recommendation.
Do you have enough time to get the bid documents together for the pavilion?
The city hall is priority number one, but we'll do our best.
His general answer earlier was yes.
If the decision was to go forward and do it, the office will not be taking Christmas break this year.
There we go. Lump a coal for a while.
That Friday after Thanksgiving, I'd like to know this week so that the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Well, it's separate and it doesn't get around that we're trying to put that together.
No, we'll have to make sure that that's
okay. I know.
I mean, some people will try and make that.
They probably will.
Yes, you.
And also, the public's already looked at all of those plans, and I think there was a consensus based on which one they liked, so.
But the money hasn't come forward, so.
But that might happen down the road, so we'll have to, but overall, that project should come in a lot less. So instead of $750,000, it might, if it were together, might be a lot less of a goal to get to.
It's rel, I mean, it might be 10% less.
Oh, all right, okay.
It's not gonna be 50% less, I'll put it that way.
Okay.
So.
I was hoping to learn that.
Yeah.
We're still looking at $700,000.
Yeah, all right.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, we're looking at an alternate that would cut the cost significantly.
Right.
But if there was the knowledge that there may be some support from the commission to make up the difference, then that would have an impact on what the committee might recommend.
Right.
True.
Is that correct, Mike?
Yes.
Okay.
We don't wanna get too muddy.
So I think you have consensus.
At least continue talking.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, part of that's a circular argument. We won't know for sure what, how much we're really talking about until we get the bids in.
Right.
So.
Or what do you design? Do you design the ultimate one, or do you just, do you do the?
Or do you have?
Do you do the other one?
Well, maybe the money will have, you know, once they see the new city facility and it's all built, you know, make that through.
Well, you can't hold the bid that long.
No, I'm not saying that, I'm just saying.
Again, the savings are not 50%, so I mean, we have to.
It's a 10% difference.
It's 5 to 10%, which is significant, though. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars. We're not talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, to be clear.
So maybe it just has to be done in stages, is all I'm saying, and.
And those are all issues that we have to deal with, and this is coming at the perfect time of year because it's budget season. We're also looking at acquiring a piece of property a little bit up the road that's gonna require significant dollars. So, I mean, I can't take all of these and just look in isolation and say, geez, let's do the pavilion project, but it's great. And we're doing the pavilion project, we're doing the open space project, we're doing the city hall project. We wanna do a marina, you know. We got fitted into, okay, what are our priorities and how can we get those to one time?
Okay, so that's all I had, which was a lot, but thank you for.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was very well done.
And I would encourage the commissioners, it was a lot. And hopefully it wasn't overwhelming, but if there are issues that you think about tonight or, you know, over the weekend or something like that, or between now and Tuesday's meeting, let us know that as soon as possible and we'll get that to Ray and get you some answers. I mean, this is a huge project. We don't, you know, this isn't the last bite of the apple, but we need to start getting down to brass tacks so Ray can put this together.
And we feel like we are, and just again for, you know, all you guys that will sit down one more time, but you're not gonna see, nothing's gonna surprise you. I mean, you might just pick something out that's like, oh, by the way, let's do this, but there's gonna be no changes to the police department, to EMS, and we added the stairway to your resume, which is better for you anyways, and I figured you'd be okay with that. So that's really the only changes, and then it's more, we are picking laminate colors and carpets and all that good stuff. So we're getting to some real detail at this point. I mean, it's not, that's why I say we're beyond, because we've got, you know, we've got tile and carpet, we know what we're doing, so.
Would there be any input from our audience? We appreciate you being here.
Nice job.
I'd just like to say, it just seems to me that this is moving on track, and is there any reason why this thing couldn't go forward the way we're talking about it tonight, the way it's designed on the location? Like it was voted on. Is there any reason why this can't go forward?
Any comments?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I don't understand the question.
I have heard comments, I'm sure you have too, of people saying, well, can't we rethink this and put it across the street or move it somewhere else? You know, this facility. Instead of putting it here.
You wanna address that, Mike?
So how many checks have you written, Mike? I just don't think that's a feasible.
Unless the city commission gives different direction to staff and to Ray, we're moving down this path. That was one of the reasons I wanted to make sure that this forum took place. If there are those issues, they need to, my feeling is they should be coming out now. So.
Does that Answer your question.
I think it's going forward. I don't see any reason why I shouldn't.
It'll be on the streets for bidding in January and tell contractors that there's going to be a list.
Like it. Anything else?
Yes, please, Mr. Chairman. Go back to our regular agenda.
Okay, thank you, Ray. That's great.
Thanks, Ray.
At this point, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
Second.
We have a second. Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.